like to welcome everybody once again. It is I, the Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
For another fun-filled week of the DeadPit.com Horror Talk Radio Show. This week, we have tons of exciting news. I know we have news on a rumor behind Halloween 9.
We got news on more remakes like we do every week. This one concerning a Dan O'Bannon classic.
Yeah, and we also have news on Saw 3 for all you fans of Saw out there that give a fuck.
Got the official lineup for Showtime's Masters of Horror Season 2.
We have news on the Hitcher remake, another remake. Can you believe this?
Yeah, I can believe it. Got news on Dario Argento's Mothers of Tears.
Yeah, and we got news on an exclusive documentary coming up about the Halloween franchise.
Also got news on the ultimate edition of a classic 70s horror film.
Yeah. All that, plus we have DVD reviews. I know we're talking about a brand new Rolf Kanifsky movie with Tiffany Shepis starring called Nightmare Man.
We're going to be talking about a kind of weird satirical British film called Funny Man.
Yeah, Funny Man, Nightmare Man.
We got a lot of man-based movies.
We also have an unearthed horror film with Ken Foree in it for a few minutes. Death Spa.
Got an Uwe Boll classic.
Uwe.
In Blood Rain, which will be
right. And all that and more this week here on Dead Pit.
Yeah, and for those of you that tuned in for the last month, you realize that this, or last week actually, was the end of the May of the Dead special promotion that we had.
Yeah.
And that was just a great promotion.
Yeah. And we'll be talking a little bit about that later on. I know we're going through the fan mail. And we also have Tuesday night, the star of Nightmare on Elm Street 4, on a little bit later.
Yeah. And all through the next, I'd say, 3 months, we're going to be doing a new promotion that we've talked about in the last couple of shows called the Summer of Independence promotion.
That's right.
And that's where we're going to interview either directors, actors, might be producers, might be writers, we don't know, all involved in some way or another in the independent horror genre. Because let's face it, that's the only genre worth the fuck anymore.
But for all those out there that's not, for some reason you're not into independent movies, have no fear, because it's not going to be 3 straight months.
No, we're just going to, you know, maybe once, twice a month, I don't know, we haven't figured it out yet. We might just insert it in there and then we'll tell you, you know, that it's part of the promotion.
And we'll tell you the first guest for the Summer of Independence starting next Friday, a little bit later on the show.
Yeah, we'll lube it up before we insert that in there for you, though.
Yeah, but let's go ahead and get started on the news.
Okay.
This is a big news story that just came out regarding Halloween 9. Okay. Fangoria recently found out that the Weinstein Company may have found the director for the highly anticipated Halloween 9. Although nothing has been confirmed or denied, your favorite shock rocker, Rob Zombie, may be taking the helm. Musician Rob Zombie is best known for the hitting music scene with his band White Zombie and directing horror films over at Lionsgate, House of a Thousand Corpses, and last year's The Devil's Rejects, which we really liked. Mm-hmm. I know that a couple weeks ago we were talking about possible big news that the Halloween movies website was talking about. Possibly this is the big news.
It could be, and I'm sitting here trying to think to myself, is Rob Zombie the best fit for the Halloween series? For some reason, he doesn't strike me to be in that same genre. The kind of films he does are more like exploitation, like grindhouse films from the 70s.
Yeah, and I don't know much about what Rob Zombie's a fan of. I know he's more of a fan of the, you know, the midnight movie type weird horror movie stuff. I remember a few years ago, he had like a tour of his house on MTV or something like that. He had tons of like monsters memorabilia.
He's a huge fan of the Universal monsters
and all that stuff.
This
surprised me when I read about it.
Yeah. I think that for name recognition, they probably couldn't do much better, but I don't think that'd be a good fit if they do pick him. There's a lot of other people they could get.
Yeah, I know Dante Tomaselli was one that really wanted, and I could, you know, if you watched his movie Horror, he would be a good choice for that. actually. But, I mean, hell, I'd rather have Rob Zombie directing it than, you know, just some douchebag they hire.
I'd rather have him direct it than, like, the 90% majority of people that they get right now for, like, video game movies and shit like that.
Yeah.
In more remake news, because, you know, we always like to keep people informed about remakes, aside from the fact that coming up next week will be the Omen remake.
Yeah, it's actually coming out Tuesday.
Yeah, 666. See, that had to be the
yeah,
day.
And that just looks like a complete rehash of the original, judging by the trailers.
Yeah, it looks like shit. But we got news concerning a Return of the Living Dead remake. The producer of the last two films, which were Necropolis and Rave to the Grave, I guess.
Yeah, which came out on Sci-Fi. They were Sci-Fi originals.
Is now aiming for a remake of the 1985 classic, which is just what we need. I mean, shit.
Yeah, I mean, we just have to have another remake.
They already did Dawn of Dead, and they're going to be doing Day of the Dead, so why not? Everything with Dead in the title, they just remake that. Yeah.
Then after that, they can make Return of the Living Dead Part 2.
Yeah, and speaking of Dante Tomaselli, too, just off the top of my head, because I've been looking forward to this forever, I think August the 22nd is Anchor Bay's releasing Satan's Playground.
Yeah, we got a bunch of DVD news to talk about here in a little bit, and that's one of them. And that's definitely one movie that many, many people have been looking forward to watching. And I know me and you have been talking about it for well over a year now. So definitely watch out for that. We got news on Saw 3. The synopsis was finally revealed for all those that really care for some reason. Jigsaw has disappeared, which is strange because in the last movie, I believe Jigsaw died.
No, he didn't. That was just a clever ploy.
With his new apprentice, Amanda, played by Shawnee Smith, who's returning for the second time, the puppet master behind the cruel, intricate games that have terrified a community and baffled police has once again eluded capture and vanished. While city detectives scramble to locate him, Dr. Lynn Dellen, played by Bakar Sumek, is unaware that she is about to come. Become the latest pawn on his vicious chessboard.
Oh, God.
One night after finishing a shift at her hospital, Lynn is kidnapped and taken to an abandoned warehouse where she meets Jigsaw, played by Tobin Bell again. Bedridden and on the verge of death, she is told that she must keep the madman alive for as long as it takes. Jeff, played by Angus McFadden, who I don't know who the hell that is, another of his victims, to complete a game of his own. Racing against the ticking clock of Jigsaw's own heartbeat, Lynn and Jeff struggle to make it through each of their vicious tests, unaware that he has a much bigger plan for both. People over at Lionsgate are fucking geniuses.
Yeah, I just can't tell you like how much I wish they would have stopped with the first movie. But...
Yeah, I know... You know, there's a little thread going on the board, the message board over at deadpit.com, cheap plug. What movie that everyone else likes that we hate, which or we don't like or whatever it is. And, you know, there's a few movies on there that it talks about. And I picked Saw as one of mine simply because, you know, when I watched it, it was okay. I don't see what the big deal was with it.
I remember watching that movie down here. Because Tim recommended it, I think. Which is fucking bizarre, but...
One of our other pals.
Yeah, but I thought it was a pretty good movie, but damn. I mean, I never thought in a million years they'd make sequels out of it. I thought that would be like a one-shot movie. But it's not a movie that looks like you could ever really...
Well, I'd say if it was released...
Like if they made a sequel to Seven.
If it was released by another company, there probably wouldn't be a sequel for it.
Yeah,
but Lionsgate releases a million movies a year. Either on DVD or theatrically, and that's how it goes.
Which, by the way, if you want to read that whole synopsis, you can go to Lionsgate.com. I think that's the official website.
Lionsgatehorror.com is where they put all their horror info up to.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of it.
Yeah, because they release like 19 horror films a month.
Yeah.
So it should be all right. Okay. There's some latest news on the Masters of Horror Season 2 directors, and they are going to be... Brad Anderson, who directed Session 9, which, if you haven't seen that movie, it's definitely worth watching at least once. Ernest Dickerson, who this is one of them that I... They always put one or two in there that I can't fucking figure out. This is one of them. He directed Demon Knight, And like
I think he directed the movie Bones too.
Yeah, that was the other one. That guy's horrible.
Hey, I mean that guy's a master of horror, buddy. He directed Bones.
And I got Tom Holland, who did. He actually is a master of horror. He did Fright Night and Child's Play. Dario Argento is going to be back again. John Carpenter is going to be back again. Joe Dante's back. Mick Garris, Stuart Gordon, Toby Hooper, and John Landis. Those are
a lot of people coming back.
Yeah. Most of those are returns from season one, except for maybe the first three that I mentioned. Yeah. Brad Anderson and Dickerson and old Tom Holland.
Yeah, I know there was a rumor for a while that Rob Zombie was going to do that, but I guess they never did come to terms.
I'd heard that, too. Apparently, Rob Zombie's rumored to be in everything that has to do with horror.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, horror.
But, yeah, we got some more Rob Zombie news, something that is official. Turner Classic Movies has announced that Rob Zombie will host the Turner Classic Movies Underground, a weekly late-night cult movie showcase debuting in October. TCM Underground will serve as home to some of the truly visionary cult films that have made it over the past century. From stylish horror movies to offbeat black comedies, we are proud to have talent like Rob Zombie hosting the showcase, which is certain to broaden TCM's appeal beyond our loyal audience. Rob Zombie will not only introduce the features, but select them as well, which is pretty good, which means we won't get the same old shit.
Hopefully not.
Already set for broadcast is George Romero's The Crazies, Francis Ford Coppola's debut shocker Dementia 13, Leonard Castle's The Honeymoon Killers, Senjun Tsuyaki's Yakuza thriller, Tokyo Drifter, and Ed Wood's Bride of the Monster. Like all Turner Classic Movies, they'll be presented uninterrupted and commercial-free.
It must be a busy couple of weeks for Rob Zombie, because I got some more news about his next film project.
Is it the cartoon?
It is.
Okay.
And I never will be able to figure out why he decided to do this next, but okay. Paul Giamatti will apparently headline the voice cast of Rob Zombie's The Haunted World of El Superbisto.
Oh, shooky.
In production right now at Burbank Studios. Giamatti will play Dr. Satan. That's original. The film's villain.
What?
Dr. Satan, the film's
again?
Villain.
Another Dr. Satan.
The 2D animated comedy based on the Spook Show International comic book created by Zombie follows the exploits of a washed-up Mexican wrestler, El Superbisto, in the mythic world of Monsterland. El Superbisto will be voiced by Tom Papa. His sister, Susie X, will be voiced by Sherry Moon Zombie. And the robot, Murray, will be voiced by Brian Posehn, who was in Devil's Rejects.
Let me ask you something real quick, because I know you're probably more familiar with Rob Zombie's music. Doesn't he have a song called that?
What, El Superbisto?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I just thought of that for some reason. I thought he did.
I don't remember if he has a song called that.
Somebody email us if he does.
Yeah.
Hitcher remake casting news.
Fuck yeah.
For all those that don't know, Sean Bean, who was in another horror movie recently known as Silent Hill, is thumbing his way to the Hitcher. Rogue Pictures remake of the 1986 horror film being produced by Platinum Dunes, according to the Hollywood Reporter. Sophia Bush is also on board with the film, which is being directed by veteran music video helmer Dave Myers. God, see, this is what I'm talking about.
God.
Okay? You're going to let a fucking music video direct a fucking movie. Now, how stupid is that?
Well, they're going to let porn directors direct porn movies. And
well, at least porn is a whole film.
That's true.
I mean, a music video is only like 3 or 4 minutes.
I don't know.
The script follows a young couple driving across the country who become prey for a serial killer who blames all of his murders on the young man. Eric Berndt wrote the current draft. Sean Bean will carve out the serial killer role made famous by Rutger Hauer in the original.
There's no fucking way in a million years that anybody, see, is ever going to be able to top that role. Because that's like a specialty role. It's almost like people have carved out their whole careers on one role, and you're going to try to remake that? That don't make any damn sense.
They're going to remake it. It's not no going to try to. Yeah, they're going to remake it.
No, they're going to try to remake that role. Yeah. That ain't going to work. They'll try to do it.
See, though, here's the thing about a movie like The Hitcher or even Dawn of the Dead or When a Stranger Calls and stuff like that. you got all these movies that are really cult movies that not a lot of people know about. When they come out in theaters, your little teeny boppers are going to think it's something new. You know, that they ain't going to have any idea that it's a remake.
Yeah,
and that pisses me off.
That's the point, is the name recognition. And then for the people that it doesn't get by the name recognition, which would be probably our age group, then you got the people that think that it's just, you know, like you said, an original concept.
Yeah.
Which they get them either ways.
And see, you know, something else that pisses me off too about remakes, and I never even mentioned on the show either. You know, when you're looking on the TV and you see something on, you see, oh shit, man, Texas Chainsaw Massacre's on. Nope, it's the fucking remake. Oh God, Psycho's on. Fucking you know, American Movie Classics or something.
Man,
it's the one with fucking Vince Vaughn in it. So, yeah, I mean, 90% of the time, when you see those movies on, it's the fucking remake now. And that just really pisses me off. Yeah, I guess it's time to take a quick break, and we'll be back. We've got a ton more news to get through. We better hurry. So, we'll see you here in a few minutes here on DeadPitch.com.
On October 20th through 22nd, 2006, in Racine, Wisconsin, it is... It Came From Lake Michigan, Wisconsin's only horror film festival. All independent filmmakers nationwide are welcome to participate in... It Came From Lake Michigan, with special guests including... Lloyd Kaufman, Fred Olen Ray, Brink Stevens... Debbie Rochon, Susie Lorraine, Jason Paul Collum, Scott Goldberg, and many more. Be sure to check out It Came From Lake Michigan.com, or it might just come for you.
Welcome back to DeadPit.com. I'm Uncle Bill.
I'm the Creepy Kentuckian, if you will.
This is the new section of the programming. Now, onward with some actual new films that aren't remakes, or sequels, or any kind of bullshit like that.
We only have a small list of these.
Yeah, this won't take long. Cronenberg's new film, for those who liked History of Violence, I've seen it, and it wasn't all about that I thought it was going to be from the hype, but it's called Eastern Promises, and it stars Naomi Watts, will reteam with Viggo Mortensen, which I don't know what he's... Viggo Mortensen must have some kind of deal with Cronenberg now or something, for Focus Features. And Watts will play Anna, a midwife at a London hospital who gets dragged into the criminal underworld when she tries to discover the identity of a 14-year-old girl who died whilst giving birth. Viggo Mortensen is set to play the mysterious and ruthless Nikolai, a man with links to London's underground mafia. So that's Cronenberg's new film.
I wish he'd just go back to the horror genre.
Yeah. It's not really a horror film. It's more like a thriller. But I don't think he really makes horror films anymore.
Got news here from Core 5 Films and Smear Pictures. They're excited to announce the debut feature-length film, the horror comedy Zombieke.
God, I've been waiting for this forever.
It will be celebrating its world premiere screening on June 6, 2006. The world's first killer zombie chicken movie was shot in Georgia with an independent crew and a cast of talented new faces. When a motley crew of Satanists kidnap a sharp-tongued southern waitress to be given up as the mortal host of the Antichrist. When her rowdy redneck friends invade the ritual, the power of hell is inadvertently transferred into the most unlikely of hosts, a sacrificed chicken.
I just think that's hilarious that they said it's the world's first zombie chicken movie. That's because they could like beat Trauma out, like, because they're, you know, they can put the film out quicker.
Yeah, there's going to be a lawsuit going on to say who could say they made the first zombie chicken movie.
That's just amazing to me that they would rip off a movie like that that hadn't even been made yet.
I don't know what ripped what off, actually.
Poltergeist has been rumored for friggin' at least a year now, I can think of.
Yeah, but I don't even know if it's how much of it's shot or how much of it's finished.
That's true, but I just can't imagine for some reason... I don't know.
Yeah.
In any regard, either film.
Yeah, but anyway, though, the film premiere will be held at Startime Cinemas in Roswell, Georgia, on June 6th at 7 p.m. And you can contact SC Caruso at pr@zombique.com for more info if you want to go to that in Georgia.
And now for something a little bit different. For people that are fans of August Underground, which I know we got a couple people listening to the show that are.
I'm actually a fan of the first movie. I'll say that.
The teaser trailer for the next movie called The Red Centaur is now online at their site, www.toetagpictures.com. Directed by Fred Vogel, the movie chronicles one boy's obsessive devotion for his high school girlfriend and the tremendous scheme he devises to earn back her fleeting love. Butchery and carnage will reign as Mitch seeks vengeance for his heartache while inducing fear and mayhem for all who dare to get in his way of the following, the Red Sin Tower. You can just imagine what that's going to be like if you've ever seen any of the August Underground films. So if you're a big fan of, like I said, of explicit gore and baby fucking and, you know, ass raping with barbed wire.
I'm a big fan of all that.
Yeah, you can check that out.
Got news on here, another upcoming slasher pick that is currently filming on Ontario, Canada, Left 4 Dead. The film's producer, Kyle Kovac, recently spoke with our good friends at Fangoria. Mentioned, we just began shooting this week, and both the cast and crew feel this project has a lot of potential. Our cast includes Halloween 4 and 5, Danielle Harris, who starred in those movies, Boyd Banks, who was in Land of the Dead and the Dawn of the Dead remake, Sean Roberts, who's also in Land of the Dead, and as well as Blood Angels and the upcoming Skinwalkers, are all in it, to name a few. Left 4 Dead is basically a suspense-filled a la Halloween with lots of gore like Friday the 13th mixed in with some comedy similar to the original Return of the Living Dead done with 1980s flair. Left 4 Dead is about a fraternity beer run that ends in an accidental death with the 5 frat brothers involved vowing never to speak of the incident again. A year later, during a Halloween party, however, a mask left behind at the scene of the death begins turning up, and the frat boys begin suffering horrible, horrible deaths. The movie is being directed by Christopher Harrison.
Let me get this straight. A group of kids gets killed in front of another group of kids, and they don't want to talk about it until a mask starts showing up.
Scan the shit out of them!
So at least it wasn't a note that said, I know what you did last summer, I guess.
That's right. But hey, it's got Danielle Harris in it. And that's enough reason for me to see the damn movie right there.
That's what I'm spraying to you. I have some news about the much talked about and anticipated Dario Argento film, The Mother of Tears, which is supposed to be a sequel to Inferno. And I've got like a brief plot synopsis about it.
Very brief, by the way.
Set in modern-day Rome, it begins with the church grave of legendary occult fighter Oscar de la Valle being unearthed by bulldozers. Chained to the coffin by crucifixes is an urn that is sent to the Rome Museum of Art Restoration Study student Sarah Mandy, played by Sienna Miller. Apparently the film connects to Suspiria, Inferno in very intriguing ways. The Tanz Academia students' ornate wall decorations revealing secret passages and the pivotal clue, what you see doesn't exist and what you can't see is truth. There's even a crazed monkey like in Suspiria, or like in Phenomena as well.
Oh, shit! That sounds interesting, actually. Yeah. We've got any more new movies to talk about?
No, that's all I've got for the news.
We've got a shitload of DVDs to talk
DVD
about.
DVD releases will take about 30 minutes.
First, I want to mention our good friends over at BCI Nevers. They have some new releases coming out and creating the Crypt of Terror double features series. Each DVD will include 2 films from a particular country. The first 2 Crypt of Terror releases, Night of the Bloody Apes and Curse of the Doll People. The second disc is Cemetery of Terror and Grave Robbers. That is from Mexico. Those will be available August 8th. And if you're a fan of foreign horror, you definitely want to pick these up.
Here's some amazing shit that I was just reading here, too. You remember how we always bitch about Paramount and the fact that they don't take advantage of how many horror titles
that
they have, you know, and they don't release that many horror. And plus, they fucked over the Friday 13th box set so bad that it wasn't even really funny. Well, apparently they've decided to cash in on all the recent horror-related goodness. Because they've got at least 4 films coming out. Brand new editions of 4 films. Among them is Let's Scare Jessica to Death, 1971. and that's going to be on disc August 29th. The studio is also releasing a trio of Stephen King titles and sprucing them up with a bevy of special features. Cujo, The Dead Zone, and Pet Sematary all have their eye fixed on September release, with supplements that range from director commentaries to all-new interviews with cast and crew.
Cujo needed a new DVD.
Shit, so did Pet Sematary. Both of those movies are fucking horrible. But elsewhere, real quick, I want to mention that MGM is finally recognized the fact... MGM is pretty good about horror films, usually. They recognize the fact that this year marks the 20th anniversary of Tobe Hooper's Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
Yep.
So Fangoria apparently passes on this news. Details are sketchy, but word is that almost a dozen members of the cast and crew, including stars Bill Moseley and Carolyn Williams, and FX creator Tom Savini, are all contributing their memories in new interviews and or feature commentaries. There will be also deleted scenes, and the movie will be presented in a new 16:9 enhanced high-definition transfer.
So definitely keep your eyes peeled for that one,
folks. I've heard tons of people say that they watched that movie again recently and it wasn't as good as they thought it was.
Well, honestly, if you're being honest, the last part of the movie sucks. It really does.
Well, yeah, but...
It's sort of like House of 1,000 Corpses, like they're in the catacombs.
That's true. Yeah. That guy, it is almost like Tobe Hooper ran out of ideas and shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, he gave up. About, you know, 15 minutes left in the movie, he's like, I don't know how to end this fucking thing. That's
but
it.
Jesus Christ, Bill Moseley's performance in that movie will be enough to make you like it.
Yeah, the first part of the movie is good enough to buy it, honestly. But, I mean...
It's got Dennis Hopper in it, too, for God's sake. Back when he was actually, like, still doing movies.
He's still doing movies now. Yeah,
I mean, before the Land of the Dead phase, where he'd just do anything for a couple dollars.
Yeah. Our new pals over here at Tartan, a superb, if you're a fan of Japanese, Asian horror and stuff like that, they come out with superb product. All their DVDs, DTS sound, stuff like that. But real quick, One Take Only, coming out August 22nd, an Asian Extreme title, Oxide Pang of the Eye, made his solo directorial debut with this film. H6 Diary of a Serial Killer, also August 22nd. The first ever Spanish horror film from Tartan Extreme. We also have The Death of Mr. Lazareso, September 12th. That one comes out. The Maid also comes out September 12th, which earned a record-breaking $700,000 at the box office in the United States, I think it says on here. That's pretty amazing. Lady Vengeance comes out the 26th, and this is one I've actually heard a lot about.
I have too.
The director of Old Boy, and you can expect those out. And, you know, if you're a fan of these movies, you already know what Tartan Asia Extreme is because they're probably the best company that releases those.
And, you know, like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Asian horror, but I've not seen that much Asian horror. The things that I've seen are mostly limited to, I think, Stacy, which I actually liked, and Audition, and maybe Junk.
Yeah.
But all the other films that I've seen in the genre, all like are the Ring stuff and the Grudge, and I don't like that shit, so hopefully it didn't.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few that I'd like to see that I heard was real good. I heard Old Boy was really good. I heard Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance or something like that. I heard that was a good
Battle
one.
Battle Royale
is another one, yeah.
But I guess we should mention in some of the probably biggest DVD release news, and we got two things on here that will be the biggest DVD release news in a long time.
Yeah.
But this one comes from Dark Sky Films. Artwork and details available for the fall DVD of the Ultimate Edition of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which has been slated for a September 26th release, containing both the previously produced The Shocking Truth documentary, and a new one by Michael Felcher, the Tobe Hooper, Daniel Pearl, Gunnar Hansen commentary from the Elite Laserdisc, which, you know,
I've heard it.
Yeah.
And it's on the DVD, too.
Plus a new talk by Marilyn Burns, Alan Danziger, and the late Paul Partain, and production designer Robert H. Burns.
Who's also... Yeah,
he's dead now. So, but deleted scenes and promotional material, and of course, a new high definition anamorphic widescreen.
You know something real quick, too. A lot of people say, oh, another Texas Chainsaw Massacre release. What the hell? Let me tell you something, okay? Yeah, they released, what, two or three different ones.
Yeah, but
it was the same disc. All they did was put a new cover on there. It's the same shitty non anamorphic transfer You know, it has a good commentary on it, and that's about it. That's all you can say for it. So we needed this, and Dark Sky Films is one of the best new companies out there, and they will do it justice, I guarantee you.
The same day, and I can't wait for this day, by the way.
Yeah.
Hooper's follow-up, Shocker, Eaten Alive, which I saw a long-ass time ago, never been able to find on DVD worth picking. Yeah. But hits the racks. Details have yet to be confirmed. I've actually seen the cover for that, and it looks fucking awesome. But I'm pretty sure it's going to have a new Animorphic widescreen release, too.
Eaten Alive was, I don't know if it was ever on DVD before, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, was it?
I've seen the DVD used before. I just never like had a chance to buy it. It looks fucking shitty.
I'll tell you, though, man. I know we've been singing their praises on here for a long time. Dark Sky Films is getting to be the number one company right now. As far as new releases go.
Now, as far as stuff that I like or I'm concerned with coming out, yeah, they probably are.
Yeah.
But those are both slated for September 26th, so you look out for that.
There's another one coming out, though. Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer 2, which Dark Sky Films is also coming out with that same day as well. All those are coming out. Also, some Anchor Bay stuff.
It's finally this, about time that Anchor Bay got their shit together right around the same time, of course, Dark Sky and all these other companies are starting to release this stuff.
Yeah, and they've redeemed themselves because I guess the first one we can mention is Satan's Playground finally coming out August 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
The DVD will include widescreen presentation, enhanced for 16:9 TVs. You'll have audio commentary with writer-director Dante Tomaselli, Satan's Playground behind the scenes, poster, and still gallery. The DVD release of Satan's Playground culminates over a year of intense anticipation in the genre community, as the film has already received an advanced release coverage from such prestigious publications and websites, including Fangoria Magazine, The New York Post, The Village Voice, Giant Magazine, HorrorChannel.com, and DeadPit.com. I had that last part in there.
That's cute. Yeah.
We've both seen the 5-minute preview that Dante sent us. This is one you want to watch. Trust me.
This is like fucking Christmas for us.
You don't even understand,
really.
It is.
I mean, and on top of that, coming out from Anchor Bay, as if that wasn't enough, I guess I'll save the big one for you because you've been shitting your pants for this for a long time.
Well, yeah.
But I'll just go ahead and mention that they're also going to release Halloween 4 and 5, the Divimax versions of this film, on July the 25th. This comes from Anchor Bay, okay?
Yep.
In addition to the new high-definition transfer, which is 16:9 enhanced, there'll be Dolby Digital 5.1 surround sound, and they come with audio commentary by actresses Ellie Cornell and Daniel Harris, audio commentary by director Dominique Othenin Girard and actress.
I like that look on your face.
And actors Harris and Jeffrey Lanman. Halloween 4, the final cut, which I'm assuming is with deleted scenes. I can only guess.
Probably.
And on the set of Halloween 5.
Yeah, I mean, they release all these DivMax, but at least this one, they include the 5.1. You have the commentary on it and stuff. I know I already have the Bare Bones releases, which they released 3 or 4 years ago. But, yeah, we'll definitely check those out and review those for you, hopefully.
But around that same time, around July 25th, is when they got scheduled. What do they have scheduled?
Oh, God, no. Halloween documentary, okay? 25 Years of Terror, the most comprehensive and official documentary on the Halloween films ever produced, is coming July 25th. The film will be narrated by PJ Souls. The documentary chronicles the longevity of the films over the past quarter century and features over 80 interviews with actors and crew members from the entire franchise, as well as fans and critics. Also features the never-before behind-the-scenes clips, rare photos, alternate footage, original artwork, music, and footage from the fan-organized Halloween Returns to Haddonfield 25th Anniversary Convention, which was a couple years ago. Retail will be $19.99, and if you love documentaries anyway, you're going to love this. But if you're a Halloween fan, you have to own this. I can run down all the extras, which was just announced a few minutes ago, actually. You have the 84-minute feature documentary. You have extended celebrity interviews. You have Halloween 2 extended interviews, Halloween 3 extended interviews, Halloween 5 on-set footage, Halloween convention montage, Halloween convention behind-the-scenes gallery, the fans of Halloween, a slew of convention panel discussion footage on the Halloween films featuring numerous actors and crew members from the Halloween films, Halloween location stills, Halloween original artwork gallery, and the Halloween Autopsis, an original 24-page comic exclusively found in this DVD package.
Now, shit, that's just too much Halloween.
You've got the documentary, all right? You've got over 4 friggin' hours of extras for $19.99, folks.
That's crazy. That's just fucking crazy. They're giving away Halloween shit.
I can't have that.
It's like,
I mean, it's too cheap.
The prices have been slashed to order, and they're throwing the Halloween shit right at you.
But if you want to check out...
I'm excited. Go.
If you want to check out the cover art, which is over at deadpit.com, you can check that out, and it looks great, and it's making my mouth water right now thinking about it.
Yeah, I know. I just came.
Also, though, real quick, Anchor Bay's got some more shit coming out. August 15th, you've got 2 more Masters of Horror series. You've got Dario Argento's Jennifer and John McNaughton's Hegel's Tale to arrive the same day. There'll probably be similar supplements and extras and stuff. Also, Dario Argento, Do You Like Hitchcock, which is one of his newer films, is being released from Anchor Bay on that day. And also on Anchor Bay's slate, The Tooth Fairy on August 8th, Superstition and Freak Out is in October. And the last 3 Masters of Horror, Bill Malone's Fair-Haired Child, Toby Hooper's Dance of the Dead, and at last, Takeshi Miike's imprint is set for release in September. And you can probably look for the box set in December, if I'm guessing.
That's way too much DVD news.
Yeah, I mean, thought Anchor Bay was slacking.
Yeah, really.
I got to hand it to them.
That's too much to give away for free right there. I mean, you're not going to find that kind of high-quality information.
You got any more DVD stuff to talk about?
I guess just one more thing to mention from Lionsgate. I'm not sure that mentioned this or not, but the Wrong Turn 2 cast has been announced.
Thank God.
No! Yeah. But the thing about this cast is that it includes Ken Kersinger, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, Lord.
Because I'm not sure what part he's going to play exactly, but I would imagine it would be one of the killers.
Yeah, possibly.
But, yeah, that's all I got to say. Unless the Mick Garris Stephen King telemovie Desperation will be on DVD August 29th from Lionsgate as well.
Yeah. Speaking of DVDs, though, I'm never going to be fully pleased until these 2 movies are out on DVD.
Blood Diner and Night of the Creeps?
No.
Oh, shit.
Blood Diner's already out on DVD.
Yeah, but it's
the
Canadian.
Monster Squad. You can, if you want the Monster Squad on DVD, first of all, you write to Mr. Sumner M. Redstone, care of Viacom, 1515 Broadway, New York, New York. You write yourself a nice letter and say, Mr. Redstone, please release the Monster Squad on DVD. We want a lot of extra, features. We want an uncut version of the Monster Squad. We want commentary from all the monsters. We want a Brett Chalam, Horus in Remembrance of video. We want 5.1 surround. We want anamorphic transfer. We want a Fred Decker retrospective. Also, though, the Night of the Creeps DVD. We want that one, too. Mr. Michael Linton or Mr. Bob Osher, care of Sony Pictures Entertainment, 10202 West Washington Boulevard, Culver City, California. And I think we also have some screenings to talk about real quick. All right. Metropole NYC. We talk about them often on here. They're going to have a screening Monday, June 6th at 10 p.m. of Lamberto Bava's Demons.
Which I really, really like that movie, and for some reason you don't. I'm assuming it's
talked about that before on here, but who gives a fuck? Well, I don't like it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. You're just fucking silly like that.
Yeah. And also, a film we're going to be reviewing a little bit later, but a good friend of ours, Tiffany Sheppas, told me to mention this personally on the show today. Nightmare Man, the premiere is tonight at the Fangoria Convention in Burbank, California, at the Burbank Airport Hilton at 8:30 p.m. Okay. And we're going to be reviewing that later.
Yeah.
But I'm just telling you, God damn it, that movie's awesome right now.
And when we come back from break here in a minute, I actually want to run down the list of things that it's going to be. Because Anchor Bay is putting on this Fangoria Burbank Horror Convention. And I swear to God, this shit just amazes me. If you're anywhere like within 200-300 miles of this fucking thing, you don't go to it, there's something bad wrong with you.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. This is going to be an extra long show today, folks.
Well, it's been 2 weeks since
we if you haven't noticed, we're running long, but goddamn it, that's okay. But we'll be back with the Fangoria news going over the weekend of horror that is this weekend, only on DeadPit.com.
You won't believe the people listening to DeadPit.com this summer. Takashi McKay.
DeadPit.com.
Uwe Boll.
Ich bin wirklich shitty film. Ich bin seine Zeit. I'm at DeadPit.com. Raggedon.
Zelda Rubinstein.
Caroline, I know you're dead, but you can listen to DeadPit.com, Caroline.
Eli Roth.
I love talking about hostile.
The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
I tell you, baby, DeadPit.com is my favorite place for the horror talk radio, if you will.
And Ethel.
Oh, shit. Who the fuck are you and what the fuck do you want?
We're DeadPit.com.
Welcome back here on DeadPit.com. I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill. And now I'd just like to talk a little bit about the special three-day event that Anchor Bay is putting on in Burbank, California, which is Fangoria's Weekend of Horrors.
It's making me moist.
I'm just going to – we don't have time to go through everything that's going to be in each of these panels, but I'm going to run down the list, you know, by day of what's going to be occurring. On Friday, June 2nd, which is today, there will be – starting at 1:30 and 30-minute intervals after that, first peek of Dead On, The Life and Cinema of George A. Romero.
Which, Rusty Nails, yeah, it's his new movie.
The live feed panel, which is Ryan Nicholson. Fred Decker.
Oh, shit!
Is at 2:30. You meet, and he's going to have a talk about Night of the Creeps and the Monster Squad. Night of Living Dead 3D panel with everybody basically from that movie. Brotherhood of Blood panel. Nightmare Man panels at 4 p.m. Uh-huh. with stars Richard Mole, Tiffany Shepis, and Blythe Metz, and writer-director Rolf Kanisky. The Grave Dancers panels after that. Jim Isaac, Grace Premier, the Abominable panel, with director Ryan Schifrin and Tiffany Shepis. Lance Hendrickson's at 6:15, and the Full Moon Radio Show with Charles Band. It's going to be at 7 p.m. on that day. Okay, so Saturday at 11:30 a.m. and 30 minutes after, each thing I mentioned, Lloyd Kaufman Live, Anchor Bay Entertainment presents Halloween Lives, which is basically about the upcoming documentary.
Yeah, upcoming, probably Halloween 4 and 5, too.
Yeah, the Masters of Horror presentation with creator Mick Garris, Stuart Gordon, William Malone, and David J. Show. The Driftwood panel, which will have Tim Sullivan, Domino's Page, and Talon Torero. That is Hood of Horror panel. Surprise guest, Billy Drago.
Kill him!
The 2:30 will be the Hatchet panel with just about everybody in that movie, including director Adam Green. The Screamwriters panel will be at 3. Feast panel, Unearthed panel, Hack Slash panel, Reeker panel. Bruce Campbell at 6:10. Oh, God, he's going to wipe his ass with his own chin. That'll be at 6:10. Okay, Sunday, starting at 12 noon, the Horror Comics panel, which actually has John Russo on it. The Furnace panel with Danny Trejo. The Tripper panel with David Arquette, really? Okay. The Omen preview will be at 2 p.m. A Career in Fear with Bob Clark will be at 2:30. The Sinjin Smith panel with our good friends Ethan Dittmeyer will be at 3. Guillermo del Toro will be at 3:30. K&B Effects, Fangoria Spotlight, Mindfire Entertainment will be there.
Ellie?
Yeah, I don't think Ellie's going to be there. It doesn't mention it. The Nightmares and Dreamscapes panel. That's
yeah, basic shitload of stuff.
That's okay. That doesn't even include the film part of it. That's just the people
you know what,
that
man,
are
going
to be there.
We're going to have to go to one of them. We're just going to have to break down and somehow get our ass there.
Yeah, you have no idea like what I would do to go to one of those shows.
It'd be great.
Should we play the interview?
Yeah, I guess we should. There's probably some people, some Nightmare on Elm Street fans, wanting to know what Tuesday has to say.
So this is our exclusive interview, and I don't think she's done many interviews at all, if any.
I'm pretty sure she hasn't done any online for a Nightmare on Elm Street, but I could be wrong. I mean, somebody will email me if I'm wrong.
And, you know, this is pretty exclusive, and she was really a really nice person about it. She's probably really pissed off about it by now.
But, yeah, she's got some bizarre shit that's happened to her, too, that she's going to talk about, which is probably why she tries to distance herself from horror. But, yeah, check all this out and more on this interview with Tuesday Night here on DeadBit.com.
How did you first get involved in the entertainment industry?
I first got into the entertainment industry when I sing too. So I kind of started singing. I started playing at clubs, and I got like a record deal with Epic and CBS. And when I did that, I also started to do acting, and I went out and auditioned for Nightmare on Elm Street, and then basically and the show Fame. Do you remember that show?
Uh-huh.
That was my first job, actually. Fame was my first job.
Debbie Allen was on that show?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And Janet Jackson. That was really fun.
I guess you were a musician first and an actress?
Yeah, I was a musician first, and then I kind of, what happened is I didn't really want to tour. I really wasn't into traveling a lot, and I was so into acting. I can't really say which one I like better, because whenever one I choose to do, I pretty much do 100%.
Yeah.
So, but the acting, there's just a certain passion there that I it's such a great escape with it. I love it.
Yeah. Was it Nightmare on Elm Street 4 was your first film, right?
Yeah, that was my first film, yeah.
Okay, and
before that, I was on General Hospital, the soap opera, for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you familiar with the other Nightmare movies before?
Oh, yeah.
Are you a big fan of scary movies?
Well, you know, I was a big fan of Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one, because I thought that was just really brilliant. So when I got the 2 was okay, 3 was good. I still think 4 was the best one, not because I was in it, but I just think it was just such a good story.
Yeah, and I believe it made the most money of any of them.
It did, yeah. It did. Actually, I think the budget to make it was $5 million, and it made like $89 million. It was like the number one movie in America for like 6 weeks.
Yeah, that was always one of my favorites, too, because I think it was the first one I got to see in theaters. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So how did you get the role of Kristen in Nightmare on Elm Street 4?
Well, I had an audition. I auditioned for it, and I met Renny Harlin, and they thought I looked like Patricia Arquette enough, and I kind of had to groom myself after that because I was taking her place.
Yeah.
So I went in, and I was cast first, and then I pretty much helped with the rest of the casting.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? I mean,
that was cool because actually, my partner in my business, Tobias, right now.
Yeah, Lisa Wilcox.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I picked her. I auditioned with her like, you know, 15 years, 14 years ago or whatever it was, and I picked her because I thought she was the best one.
Yeah.
And then they brought in, you know, the one who played her brother, Andros Jones, and then I picked the guy who played Danny. I just kind of like, they wanted me to see which, you know, how everybody worked together, but it was kind of cool because I could think I walked into a nice place.
Yeah. And this was, since this was your first film, were there any experiences that really stand out?
From that?
Yeah, from
that. Yeah, actually, I just remember getting it on the spot and just freaking out and running out of that building like I just won the lottery.
Yeah.
Remember that? But also, the thing about that movie and the reason why I didn't do any more horror films was because I got hurt on that film several times, and it was, to me, it wasn't run properly as far as stunt doubles, things like that. They really required us to do a lot of stuff.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah,
it was
kind of grueling. Yeah, I mean, it was great. All the rest of it was great, but to do like the stunts and things, it really it was hard for me. They hated me a few days, I'm sure.
You also did the opening theme for that movie. How did you know that whole?
Well, even the song.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because my writing partner, we knew I was doing the movie, and I was still, you know, actively doing music as well for different things, movies and things. And we kind of just wrote it in like one day and recorded it in his studio, and I drove it over to New Line Cinema, and I had Renny Harlin come out, and I played it in my car on my speakers, and he thought it was amazing, and he took it. And I didn't even know it was the title song until I sat in the theater for the premiere, which was just mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's a really cool song. I really like it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Out of curiosity, who did you see the film with?
Huh?
Who did you first see the film with?
With my mom and my agent and my friends, you know, about everybody. It was really exciting.
Yeah. As I look over these movies that you've been in, I'm just curious what it was like, you know, working with people like Robert De Niro.
It was great, actually. I had a great time working with all those people. I mean, there were a lot of great people in that movie. Mistress, it was great. It was, you know, Chris Walken and De Niro and Danny Aiello. Everybody was great. That was one of my most favorite things because I was the only one that wasn't really famous there. And it was just, they were great to me. They were really sweet. And I've noticed that the more famous a person is, it seems to me the nicer they are to you because I think some people are competing that aren't famous yet, you know what I mean? And they're always, like, kind of looking at you, trying to find a way to think you're a bitch when you're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and Joel Schumacher, Joel Schumacher was great to work with. I worked with him on Malibu Road with Drew Barrymore. That was probably my favorite experience acting ever.
Yeah, and another thing I was going to ask you about, too, as I look at this, is that you actually worked with Billy Bob Thornton as a director.
Oh, yeah.
An actor in a movie.
Yes, I did.
I'm just curious what that was like.
Oh, it was great. Billy Bob was amazing. My audition was amazing. He basically hired me on the spot, too. It was really, he told me I was his first choice. And, of course, you know, when you're an actor, you just kind of leave going, oh, my God, that was amazing. But, you know, it's probably not going to happen. You just never know because it's so competitive. But, it indeed did happen, and it was great. Working with him was amazing. I love him. He's a great guy. He's really great and so much fun.
As a director, I mean, what is he?
As a director, he's totally non-ruled. He's very, what's the word? He's fresh, and he's free. I mean, basically, we didn't do much blocking. We didn't. He just wanted natural reactions and have us, you know, move wherever we wanted to in the room, and it was pretty much like the camera followed us. It was really very interesting, and that was another movie where, you know, it was with Ben Affleck and Laura Dern and Andy Griffith, which was just insane because I love Andy Griffith. He played my dad, and I was just freaked. Everybody was all excited about Ben Affleck, and I was like, you know, sitting with Andy Griffith every minute talking about Opie and the whole show, and Billy Bob would walk by and say, now Tuesday, you're going to have to leave him alone.
Yeah.
But I was like, I can't.
Yeah, Jamie Lee
Curtis
was in that movie too, wasn't she?
Huh?
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, she was awesome. I have a good story about her.
Okay.
She, Jamie Lee Curtis came on the set, and I was in the trailer getting my makeup on, and I came out, and she's like, hey, you, get over here. And I'm like, oh, no, what's happening? You know, because I love her, but she's, you know, she's tough. She's real funny.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, you know, and she goes, so I'm in the dailies yesterday, and I'm looking up on the screen, and I see her face. I'm like, who the hell's that? Who is that amazing person? And she was just so complimentary. She said, you're amazing in the film. I said, oh my God, you know, thank you. You're great. I've always loved, you know, your films, and you're just, you know, funny as hell. And you're married to Christopher Guest, which has to be great. Yeah, it was great. It was so flattering. I was really happy.
I guess, too, you also worked with Tippi Hedren on a film?
Yeah, I did. The movie Ice Maker, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were all great, too. She was great. Bronson Pinchot, a lot of fun. It was a good part because I actually got to play, like, the girlfriend, which is kind of interesting because I usually get cast very character-y. Like, I'm either, like, the vixen or the, you know, the woman who took the husband from the girl or the, you know what I mean? It was just kind of nice to play the girlfriend because I haven't done that since Nightmare on Elm Street. Even on the X-Files and everything, I mean, I just always play sort of like something, you know, a little more crazy, which is good. But it was nice to play just a normal girl.
Out of all the movies that you've done, and you have done the X-Files, which I think was Trevor was the episode?
Yes.
What would you say would be, like, your favorite film, I guess?
Oh, my favorite acting experience?
Yeah.
Or my favorite film?
Okay, that's well, both, actually.
I would say 2000 Malibu Road, with Joel Schumacher directing and working with Drew and all that. I mean, because that was a long period. We did the series for, like, 3 months. Yeah. That was my favorite character because I got to be, like, you know, I didn't have to be pretty. I wore prosthetic, you know, a prosthetic suit, so I looked really heavy. Because the whole thing was I was going to turn thinner and blonder. And, you know, there was a whole premise for that. But that was my favorite. And then I have to say my favorite film was probably Mistress to work on. And, gosh, you know, I say that because Billy Bob Thornton's was amazing, too.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, you take something different from each one.
Yeah, they both had amazing cast, too.
Oh, I know. I mean, I was so lucky. I was, like, pinching myself during the whole thing, going, what am I doing here?
So your father was Baker Knight?
Yeah.
And he actually wrote several top 10 songs. And
he
wrote, and I think Elvis recorded one of his songs.
Uh-huh. He wrote The Wonder of You for Elvis. That was number one. And he did Lonesome Town, which is also, he did, like, 21 songs for Ricky Nelson. He basically, Paul McCartney just did his song 5 years ago. He did a rendition of Lonesome Town, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but my dad's had, I mean, really, he's just amazing, amazing talent.
I actually looked up some of the people that have recorded his songs, and Dean Martin, Jerry Lee Lewis, Eddie Cochran, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
I mean, the list is pretty extensive.
It's pretty extensive, it is, yeah. I know. I sometimes, it was funny, because I always used to tell him, you know, he was over-humble, my dad. And, you know, it was always me telling him, you know, Dad, you know, Bob Dylan, and this is a great story, Bob Dylan wrote my dad, you know, I mean, wrote my father, because him and Tom Petty performed Lonesome Town at all their shows live, and they titled an album Lonesome Town that they did together.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, it was a letter basically saying, you know, I love your song Lonesome Town. Do you have anything else that you might want to give me? And I'm like, my dad's just like all calm about it, you know, and never takes anything for granted. I'm like, Dad, do you understand? That's like an icon. What are you doing? You know?
I'll tell you, your dad is the one that mainly got you into music early on.
Yes, he is. Yeah, I grew up in a room full of, like, you know, people like Ricky Nelson, you know, I mean, famous people in the living room, and I would just want to sing for them.
Yeah.
So it's like I didn't know who they were. You know, I'm like, and my dad would bring me out, you know, and I used to, you know, make my dad listen to me sing and, you know, just sit there with his cup of tea. And my poor dad, he would sit there for hours listening to me sing. And I think I was all of about 10. And I was like, Dad, I don't want people famous doing your songs anymore. I want to do them, you know.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, well, you know, your voice is changing. So when you get a little older, it's funny.
I was going to ask about your name of your father's book is A Piece of the Big Time.
Uh-huh.
But the tagline is a true story of alcoholism, barbiturate addiction, childhood abuse, acute anxiety, depression, agoraphobia, and the music industry.
Absolutely.
I was just wondering, you know, if you could tell us something about his life and...
Absolutely. My dad pretty much suffered, had a very hard life. His childhood was really abusive. He came from an alcoholic family. It was very abusive. And then as he got older, it sort of still continued. And I think that really built his talent. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The book basically is a self-help book. It's filled with celebrities, absolutely. It's got stories with him and Elvis and him and, you know, everyone that he wrote songs for. But that wasn't important to him at all. What was important to him was that he was like, this is just my life. This is who I was around, so I have to write this in my book. But what he struggled with, I mean, my dad had a part in Please Don't Eat the Daisies. I don't remember if you remember that movie.
No, I don't remember.
But with Doris Day, it was a huge movie. My dad was going to be groomed to be another Elvis, and he couldn't do it because he had, you know, he had so much, like, agoraphobia and, you know, just, you know, so much stuff that it prevented him from being there, going there and being in public, and that's why he had such a drinking problem and a pill problem, you know what I mean? Because in that time, we didn't have Paxil, do you know what I mean?
He kind of self-medicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he calls in his book, he says, you know, life as a child in Horror House 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Which is both houses, which is really funny. But the thing is, he had such a great sense of humor, that somehow he just would brighten up things because he could always somehow channel that into being positive. But the funniest thing my dad ever did was, and this is great, is that he actually checked himself in to Beverly Hills Hospital, he stole a prescription tablet from his doctor, okay?
Uh-huh.
And basically was his doctor for like 3 months.
Yeah, I've actually heard that happen a lot.
And that was just like, you know what I mean? I mean, it was great. It was like, I said, Dad, you're so cool. I mean, I know it's not nice of me to say that, but it's just like, basically, I mean, you know, he put himself in the hospital and he got the medicines he wanted.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, and then when he went back to Alabama, things were very difficult. He never really liked it there. You know, here he is. He comes out here when he's 20. He makes it as a big songwriter, and then he goes back home and basically has a breakdown because he wants to stop all the medication and just all the stuff that he had to go through. You know, I mean, he got locked in a mental ward by accident. The doctor put him in a mental ward, and the doctor was arrested for being cuckoo. You know, it was just nuts. I mean, I can't really read the book too much. I did help my dad through it, like when he would read me certain experts, you know.
Yes.
But I couldn't read it because it just really makes me cry. Pretty much, it's we were pals, you know. He's my best friend, so I'm pretty lost right now.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
I'm pretty, you know, I'm not myself. I don't think I ever really will be the same person. But I'm a survivor. I know my dad would want me to carry on with strength, you know.
Yeah.
But he was amazing, absolutely amazing man. You can't tell I love him, right?
The book is available to purchase online, is it?
Yes, it is. It's on Amazon.com. And also right now we're in the midst of doing a deal with a publisher. There's several that are interested, and I haven't really done a deal with them yet.
Okay.
But right now it's in the making.
Right.
And I hope to have it settled up in the next month or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going back, I know we're going back a while again. I forgot to ask you this, though. What was it like working with Robert Englund on the set?
Oh, amazing. It was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, Robert Englund was great. And I think the best part, Robert Englund is real down to earth. And I remember a story with him. We were inside his trailer, just hanging out, talking between shots. And there were people, massive people. We were shooting on this, like, beach in San Pedro or something, this lake.
Yeah.
And there were literally fans almost tipping the thing over. While they were in it, and I'm like, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm used to this, and it was crazy. People were trying to get in. But I think that the best thing about Nightmare on Elm Street was meeting Lisa because, you know, it was really crazy. When we met each other in the movie, we didn't really even like each other, not because we didn't know, like, really like each other or hate each other. It was just because we were so different.
Yeah.
You know, I thought she was like, you know, the Miss Wonderful Gucci, perfectly dressed, you know, great, you know, woman. And I was like this big mouth, you know, like, hey, everybody, let's all hang out. And, you know, I don't think she knew what to do with me, and I didn't know what to do with her. But, you know, I was always like kind of like jealous and kind of looking at her thinking she was great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, 14 years later, we walk into Staples, and we're brokenhearted because we just broke up with our spouses, and you know, it becomes this thing, and I'm like, oh my God, Lisa Wilcox called me. I was like freaked out. I go, I gave her my phone number. Is she really going to call me? You know, and she did, and it was like from then on, we've been in business together, and it just has been like, it's incredible. I still look at pictures of us. I always tell her, I go, I'm just freaked out. That's you. That's not my Lisa. That's someone else. You know.
Yeah.
But so much came out of it. We have a really successful company right now. And we do jewelry for, like, tons of celebrities, and it's great. And I think that the roles we play are great. I mean, Lisa is, like, on the ball, Miss Together, does everything right. And I'm, like, the creative whack job that makes things and runs around and, you know, has to be lassoed in once in a while. But very thankful for it.
I was kind of curious about this because I remember, I think it was a couple years back, they did a VH1 special on YouTube. And
yep.
Did they contact you about that? Or?
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened was Lisa actually had talked to VH1, and I guess they were talking to her about her Nightmare on Elm Street experiences because she also did Nightmare on Elm Street 5, which is so weird. She did 2 and I did 2, you know? I did 7 as well. My part was much smaller, but they were talking to her about her career and stuff, and so, she, you know, it's funny because as soon as either one of us talk about our own career, we bring up Luther Wilcox or Tuesday Night, and immediately we're like, you know, I mean, they've already got us down as like lesbians. I mean, they're crazy because the public is crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Because we work together. Oh, they must be lovers. But, yeah, she did VH1, and she, you know, they were like, oh, well, can we get your, you know, your partner and you to do a, you know, where are they now sort of thing. And, you know, we set it up, and they came to the company, and I don't know, did you see it?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, and it was great fun. I mean, it was a lot of fun. You know, I'm sure it helped our business a lot. We've had the opportunity to have some really amazing celebrity clients, like Kim Basinger, who's just an amazing person, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Mariah Carey, people that are really, you know, real people. Yeah. It's been amazing. And I think, you know, it's funny. I think it's good for me because it's kind of interesting and great not to be the commodity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
When you're an actor and you're constantly, like, that's my dog talking to you, by the way. You're constantly on trial, you know what I mean? You're auditioning, you're waiting, it's always something. But with this, it's like jewelry. And it's like, hey, if you don't like my jewelry, that's okay. I'll send you another piece. It's not me. You're not judging me personally. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was cool. It's very cool. Very thankful.
I know that Lisa does a few horror conventions and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever been offered to, I don't know if I've ever seen you at a convention or...
Yeah, I have done them. I do them rarely, okay. Just because I choose to. But I did, I've done Fangoria. We are going to do the one together coming up in June. We're doing the Fangoria one together. We're going to sit together. I've done a couple with her, and they're fun. I mean, I had a blast. I don't like to do them a lot, but, I mean, you know, it's pretty interesting. I mean, sometimes there's some really strange people there. One guy came up to me. It was really funny. He wouldn't let go of my hand. So we had to, like, get the guard.
Yeah.
You know, he was shaking my hand. And I'm like, okay, there's a time for a handshake to be over.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. And, like, the guy came over and he's like, could you, you know, you have to let go of her. Like, funny.
Yeah, we oftentimes ask people about, you know, what if they have experiences with fans or anything at these conventions, because we hear a lot of things similar to that, too.
Oh yeah, I have several. I have one that's not so great, but yeah, I was living in a renting a house, and basically I was in my bed sleeping, and basically somebody crawled in my living room and unscrewed all my light bulbs, and I could hear something out there. I thought it was my cats or my dog, and it was funny because my dog didn't bark, and so basically somebody broke in, and I didn't know what I have no idea what they were going to do because I called them. I came running out, and they got scared. And they flew out my kitchen window, and they ended up catching him. And it was actually somebody who worked at Bank of America, and he had called me. And, you know, I'm sort of an idiot sometimes about being generous because I talked to him. You know, I was like, okay, sure, I'll send you a picture. And, you know, I was like, how'd you get my number? And he's like, well, I work at the bank. And I thought it was just some nice guy. But then they started, like, calling me a little too much and calling me with other people on the line, and it was pretty scary. I mean, but the funniest thing was when my landlord came in, right?
Yeah.
When the police came. And she said to me, are you sure your cat didn't do it? That was the best. That's still one of my best things ever. I go, yeah, my cat was wearing combat boots, which I could see leaving the window with the window open. Isn't that crazy? My cat really never does that.
Yeah.
You know? That was one thing. That was the worst thing. I mean, of course there's been, you know, people trying to get in touch with me and you know, weird calls and people finding my number and stuff. But I kind of, as a matter of fact, you know, as far as Tobite goes, I mean, you know, I'm a little weary of that because Lisa and I work here. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We work in this office.
Yeah.
But we have guards and everything. But I mean, like, you know, I mean, you have to watch out for wackos, you know, coming in or, you know, it could be anybody.
There are, and, you know, horror fans are kind of, especially a little bit on the odd side when it comes
you
to
you have noticed food. That, right? You've been there and seen them.
Yeah, we've seen the fanatics, which is where fans come from.
Yeah, they're sometimes a little, you know, but then they are, but then sometimes you get to meet really, really great people. Like, you know, I've gotten to meet so many actors. I'm friends with Linda Blair, and, you know, she's great. So she's sometimes there, and I get to run into these people that I haven't seen for a while. And she and I, of course, are very into PETA, animal rights, and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's kind of neat to see people that, you know, I was very excited. I was trying to find Tabitha from Bewitched.
Right.
I was more excited about that than anyone there. I was trying to find her, you know. I couldn't find her. I was like, oh, my God, it's Tabitha? You know, when, and it's funny, you know, how you get to meet these people and you know, you're like, wow, your work was great, or you get to, you know, tell them how much you enjoyed them. You know, I do like that. I think that that's really special.
Out in the woods tonight, you probably will be thrilled. Don't go out in the woods tonight, you probably will be killed.
This is James Bryan, director of Don't Go in the Woods Alone, and you're listening to this on DeadPit.com.
Welcome back to DeadPit.com. I am Uncle Bill.
I am the creepy Kentuckian.
Now is for the ever-popular section of the programming. We answer your fan mail.
Your fan questions.
Okay, so first question, I guess this goes to CK. I don't know if y'all have answered this before or not, but what's the origins behind the name Dead Pit for your talk show?
Oh, no. Well, let's take you back now. It's been, what, about 6 months or so. The original title of the show was set to be Splatterville Radio.
Which I fucking always hated.
Because we had a little article over on the Horror Newsletter, which was called Splatterville, which was just DVD reviews that we did. We started doing those almost a year ago now. And, you know, we just thought we'd use that name. But I was going to register Splatterville.com. Some asshole registered it like the same day. And that all turned out pretty well, though, because I found out that, you know, a little domain called deadpit.com was available. And I can't really tell you what the fuck it come from. It was just me searching for cool domain names that wasn't taken for horror movies. They're for a horror radio.
So, and that's how we became the living legends that we are here at deadpit.com.
Yeah. And I guess people might be wondering where we got our radio names from.
Yeah, they might.
Might as well just mention that, too. The Creepy Kentuckian, and a lot of you know, we've said it before on the show, so my first real name is Wes.
Hey, you do it. Oh, it's Wes. I didn't know it.
But the Creepy Kentuckian came from my AOL screen name, which I've had for years. And I don't know how the hell I come up with it. I'm just talented like that.
He's just like, he's a machine, and the ideas never stop. It's a curse and a gift, folks, I'll tell you. My name, Uncle Bill.
What's your real name, first of all?
Well, if anybody listened to the Judith O'Day interview, they know that my real name is Aaron.
Oh God, it's Aaron.
Oh, shit. But
we're giving y'all some personal information here. Y'all don't deserve this.
Yeah, but Uncle Bill actually is a real person. It's actually CK's real uncle.
Great uncle, if you will.
Yeah, which I don't know why, but I just thought.
He's sort of a legend around the area. Everybody knows who Uncle Bill is, and he's always called Uncle Bill. And I don't know, I guess you just thought that was cool.
I just like the idea of having a moniker, like some kind of relative, you know, like an uncle or, you know, father.
It could be called Aunt Ethel.
Yeah.
That'd have been good, too.
It could have been anything like that, but it turned out to be Uncle Bill.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we should move along in the fan mail portion of the show. And this is a good question, actually. Of the mid to late 90s slasher films, what are your favorites, if you have any, and do you think they have any lasting value? The films I'm wondering about are Urban Legends, Scream, and I Know What You Did Last Summer. So I guess we'll answer that first.
Okay.
So out of those three films...
Well, I got to admit, when they all came out, I liked them all pretty much. I mean...
Yeah, I did too.
I know it's probably the cool thing to bash Scream right now, and those other two movies, Urban Legend and I Know What You Did Last Summer, aren't really mentioned at all anymore. It's almost like they were never made, which is sort of unfortunate because I thought Urban Legend was a pretty damn good movie, honestly. And I Know What You Did Last Summer, yeah, it's got Freddie Prinze Jr. in it. And it's also got Jennifer Love Hewitt in it. And, yeah, it's probably dated now more than any of them.
I would say that movie, probably more so than any of those other movies mentioned, was the beginning of that whole marketing to the teens fiasco that's basically carried over into now.
Well, all those three movies come out in the span of 2 years. actually.
Yeah.
96 and 97.
I liked Urban Legend, and I liked... When they come out, though, you know, you weren't thinking about stuff like we do now, about how it would impact the industry.
Scream was brand new.
Yeah.
And you had all these movies coming out that were along the lines of Scream. So it's not
surprising. I don't think I could watch any of those movies over again.
I think I could watch Urban Legend again, because I haven't seen it since, it's probably been 3 or 4 years. I know that one of the stars of Urban Legend is actually, she's from here.
She's from Hyman?
Like 20 miles from here or something. Rebecca Gayhart, which hasn't been in much since, but, you know, that was her big break in movies.
That says, the second part of the question, though, says, also, do you think the scary movies have... You know, scary movies, in quotes, have abused these films so much to the point they're barely watchable.
No, I don't. But, I mean...
I think that the actual scary movies are less watchable than the films that they parody now.
Yeah, because they've gotten out of hand. You know, it was originally supposed to parody horror movies. Now they're parodying, like, Oprah appearances and, you know, Eminem movie and stuff like that.
But as far as Scream and Urban Legend and Noise You Did Last Summer... All three of those films, when they came out, I liked them, and I couldn't watch them now just because, those are the films that came out when we were growing up.
I disagree. I mean, I don't know about I Know What You Did Last Summer. I could probably watch Scream and Urban Legend again and enjoy
it. I could, just because I've seen them so many damn times. They were just so around.
But,
you know, it's not that they're bad movies.
Magic Fan, the same guy, though, asked, what are you guys' favorite 10 holiday horror movies? Which is pretty hard to come up with a list of 10. Of those.
But we figured we'd try. And we're not entirely sure what you mean by holiday, but we're assuming that mostly means Christmas movies. So I would have to definitely say Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 especially. I mean, 1 was great itself, but you got Eric Freeman in part 2. Now,
you have a whole catalog of Silent Night, Deadly Night movies. They made like 5 or 6 of those. So you could pick those. I know there's one... around New Year's called New Year's Evil.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one we haven't seen in years, but I remember enjoying that a lot.
Then you got Black Christmas, which was the big...
Supposed Halloween
everybody
rip-off,
talking about. Yeah.
Which I don't know if I agree with that or not. I'll probably have to watch it again. I'm sure Halloween ripped it off a little bit. Uncle Sam, which is one that you thought of.
I mean, it's one of those movies like Leprechaun... And, you know, all those movies
like
that.
I like it better than Leprechaun, honestly.
Yeah, but it's that same type of movie where, that, like, Jack Frost, where the killer is, like, you know, this wisecracking kind
of... One of the last movies that William Lustig directed, too.
I guess that's true, isn't it?
Which is a shame. Another one is a Canadian horror slasher flick, My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah.
Which
if you, you know, that depends on...
You're going to love that movie.
Classify holidays, but yeah, that's be bound on.
I don't have anything against Canadians, but that's probably their best slasher film.
Yeah. And, of course, there's the classic that I'm big fond of, which was Arbor Day Massacre, which I thought that movie was killer.
Yeah, I like Labor Day, too.
Yeah.
But speaking of all these slasher movies, that got me thinking, we never did tell you who the next guest is. And the beginning of the summer of independence next week.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned that yet, so I guess we might as well.
I don't know if a lot of you folks are familiar with a movie called Don't Go in the Woods Alone.
Or just Don't Go in the Woods. I think it was shortened down to that.
Yeah. We're going to have the director of that classic slasher film from the early 80s, James Bryan, next week. And, you know, if you're not that familiar with the movie...
You should be.
You'll be familiar with it by, you know, probably the end of July, I believe, Code Red DVD is coming out with a special edition of Don't Go in the Woods.
Yeah, so. If you're not familiar with it, then you should definitely check that out when it comes out, because we don't want to have to go back to horror school. I mean, you don't want that.
If you're a fan of those slasher films, you're going to love this movie, there's no doubt. You're going to... If you're a fan of Sleepaway Camps, fan of Friday the 13th, anything like that,
especially
you know, just
if you're a fan.
Dawn,
yeah, I was going to say, if you're a fan Just Before Dawn, that's like almost the exact same movie. But
yeah, you're going to love them. You know, crazy slasher movies in the forest. You're going to love it.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Back to the question.
James Bryan, will be our guest next week.
Yeah, and the director of Don't Go in the Woods Alone.
Onward to the questions, and this one comes from the Butcher, or Hungry Butcher on the message board. If your DVD collection was on fire and you could only save three titles, which would they be? Only horror titles, please.
Yeah, what would be your three?
Well, Dawn of the Dead would be the first one. Talking about films that I've seen the most and probably could watch over a million fucking times.
Right.
And actually, I don't have a DVD of this film, but Night of the Creeps would be another one. I've got the VHS of it, so I'll
take your VCR too.
Yeah. So that would be the other one. And I guess Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because that's just one of those movies where you could rewatch it a million times.
Yeah, I think when you think about that question, you got to think about what movies you watch the most, what has the most rewatchability. And, you know, number one on my list was probably Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because there's probably not a movie, you know, ever since I was a kid that I've watched over and over and over. I don't know what it is about that movie. It's only 84 minutes long or something like that. But that would be one. I would probably pick Dawn of the Dead too, actually. Now I think about it, another classic that you can watch again, over and over again. And the other one would be Phantasm. I wish a great Region 1 DVD will come out of that soon, which I'm sure it will over time.
And for some reason,
that would be one. That would be another
about
one.
Phantasm. A lot of people think that movie has gotten a great deal of the recognition that it deserves, and that trilogy, or not trilogy, but that, I guess it's quadrilogy,
yeah,
has gotten, you know, the recognition. I don't think it has, though, really. I don't think people put that up there with, like, Friday 13th and Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street.
If you're being honest, and if you look at that film strictly as just a movie fan, Phantasm, in my eyes, is better. It has a better atmosphere than Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street, I think. And the bad part is, I suppose, is it just came out around a bad time for horror. You know, the late 70s, the only thing, you know, I remember it was right around the time Halloween came out, which I guess was, you know, a popular time for horror. But it was more of a sci-fi horror movie, which was...
I think it has more to do with the fact, and I've talked to my father about this, because for some unknown reason, he's like a huge fan of that movie.
Yeah.
He was saying that around that time, nobody had ever really seen anything like that. And it freaked people out so much, they didn't really know what to classify it as.
And you talk about...
They didn't know how to take the film.
And we talk often about independent filmmakers. And, you know, if you know much about Phantasm, you know that Don Coscarelli basically did that movie himself. He was the cameraman. He was the cinematographer. And he was the director all in one.
Most of the people in that film were somehow like friends of his, too, from what I understand.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know how the hell we got off on Phantasm. But
I've just been in that Phantasm mood lately. I don't know.
I guess we should read another fan mail question.
Butcher also wanted to know, during your show, I always hear ice cubes banging against the glass. I think it's Wes. What are you drinking?
Oh, God.
All it is like ice water, I believe. If, you know, I can't remember. I'm drinking different stuff every show. Always worry.
But what I want to know is, and there's another person that I think replied and said that they heard it too or something. Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't hear it. I edit the fucking
show.
How
the shit did you hear that? That's what I'd like to know. That's some good stalking ability there. I guess I should just mention this. More of a comment than a question, but it says, I haven't heard y'all, and that's actually in here.
We need to start saying y'all. I guess we did say that. We just don't know.
Yeah. I haven't heard y'all mention the U.S. release of the Italian classic Cemetery Man, scheduled for June 13th of this year. I'm in no way associated with this site, but you should mention that you can pre-order this from deepdiscountdvd.com for $11.99 with free shipping.
Yeah.
So we just did. There you go. You can.
And I'm hoping that we'll be able to review that one on the show a little bit. You know, a couple weeks down the line. I hear a lot of things about that movie.
I hear things. But it says at the end, I personally am excited as hell about this, as I can finally replace the shitty pirated version I got from eBay.
That's good. And I wish we could replace the shitty pirated Monster Squad and Night of the Creek versions. But I don't know about that.
That question comes to us from Doomsday, though.
Yeah, Doomsday, though. Also, I had a big, long comment on here that I missed. We didn't take questions last week, did we?
No,
comment?
No, that's why we're doing many today.
He mentions on here, hey, guys, I heard about May of the Dead on the MorningstarSaga.com from a guy who heard it from homepageofthedead.com. And I fucking love your show. I'm eagerly awaiting each May of the Dead episode. I'm glad. I hope you like the last one because, you know, getting to that real quick.
Yeah.
That was, seriously, we were a day away from not having any guest on the last week of May of the Dead.
I just really like to take this special time in my heart to thank Chris Rowe, who, if you all don't know who Chris Rowe is, he is the agent for just about everybody, including Romero, that has anything to do with any of the Dead movies. And he's an agent for a shitload of other people that has to do with horror. I just like to thank him for telling me that he was going to schedule some guests for us and then never fucking getting back in touch with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris Rowe.
You can go douche with barbed wire.
I need a hot fuck Sunday. But also, Tom Savini was probably the last hope of us getting a big name for the last show. I mean, that was the last hope because basically Chris Rowe.
Better. Tom Savini was the last hope for us getting anybody for the last show.
Yeah. Chris Rowe basically said that we could get Scott Reiniger. He told us that we could get him and he's going to talk to him for us. He told us that we could get either Eugene Clark or Pedro R.C. from Land of the Dead.
And just to blow smoke
and you know
up
what?
Our
you know what? We were actually, we were saying, you know, we're thinking about getting Ken Foree to come on and do the show. He actually told us not to pursue that.
Yeah.
Now, we've got this.
We've got this recorded.
We've got this recorded, so.
It's not as if.
We can back it up.
Yeah, we can't back this shit up. But what I thought was amazing is he said there was also a possibility, a very small possibility, but it got even smaller as the time went by. Because when I first emailed him, he said there was a good possibility we might be able to get Romero. And when we talked to him, he said there was a small possibility. He said he wouldn't rule it out. But he said Romero had lots of interviews to do.
Yeah.
The thing about it is he it wasn't just the fact that he never came through with any of that, because I could take that if he would have contacted us back and said, I can't
about it. I mean, you know.
You don't leave people fucking hanging in a lurch when you know they're trying to put together a show. That's just fucking bullshit. That's the kind of
agent, unprofessional.
That's the kind of slimy agent shit that gets all these douche cocks in trouble.
Yeah.
I swear to God, man. Nobody's ever, like, pissed me off that much as he did through that whole experience.
We're going to talk a little bit about this, but I want to get through this thing real quick right here. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about May of the Dead. He mentioned after he listened to the Friday 13th special, and he's slowly climbing his way through the archives. The interviews are in-depth, educational, and I'm amazed at the names you get for them. The show itself is hysterical. John Boy and Billy ain't got shit on you guys. I'm glad you're getting a lot of positive feedback after the second show when it sounds like you got a bunch of hate mail. I don't agree with all your opinions, of course, and I think you can be a little harsh, but I say fucking right on anyway. To hell with those who just want to tone down on the criticism. It's quite obvious that you guys are long-term fans and not just here to be snide. You are a genuine voice for a generation of horror fans who are fucking tired of remakes, sequels, and reimaginings of books and video games, and especially the shit-end product that makes you think that you've wasted your time and money. I'm surprised the producers don't roll a damn smiley face at the end of the credits, like, thanks for the cash, suckers. Your first show, The Year in Review, is an instant classic, and I'm glad that you think that, because I know that me and Uncle Bill think it's pretty shitty, actually.
The first Year in Review?
The first show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, it's got a certain charm to it, I guess, because we didn't know what the fuck we were doing. We still don't, but we really didn't know then.
Yeah, we were like, I'm creepy as fuck. I just remember saying that.
It was killing.
But he goes, hey, this is long email, by the way, and thanks to Doomsday for sending this. You're right to say that audience have lowered their standards, and a lot of them are just stupid for patronizing this stuff. But horror fans are starving. Give a man who's crossed the desert a glass of soy sauce and he'll chug that shit down. Just like you said, you have to sit through the shit if you want to catch a gem like the Devil's Rejects. But you wonder how long before the other shoe drops and sitting through the bust is no longer worth it. Remember that unoriginality is a cancer plaguing the entire movie industry right now, and I sure to fuck agree with that. Hollywood is recording record losses for the past few years. I work at a video store, and I'm always encouraging people to go to the older catalog sections if they want something good, because the new release wall is a fucking disgrace. He mentions a little something about him on here. I'm not what you guys would call a genuine horror fan, but I love zombie movies, and that love brought me to sites like this and horrorwatch.com, which made me somewhat of a horrorphile. Movies like The Thing, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, original, of course, Poltergeist, Halloween, and Pumpkinhead are now movies I cannot imagine not having back on my movie rack. So anyway, keep up the good work, and we're listening. Yeah. And that's an awesome letter he wrote there, too. Appreciate that.
Yeah, we do appreciate it. But, I tend to agree with almost everything. But
if you're going to even the non-horror stuff, Hollywood right now is fucked.
Yeah, it is.
I mean,
the big summer blockbusters, with the exception of, I guess, X-Men 3, have really just fucking bombed.
X-Men 3 made a fortune, but I heard that was a big pile of shit.
All of them are big piles of shit, all the big, huge studio movies like that.
I remember, though, this has not been long ago, 3 or 4 years ago, we would go in the summer, have little film fest, watch 4 or 5 movies, and hey, we wasn't even watching all horror movies. There were, comedies and suspense movies and stuff like that. You can't find shit. You're lucky if you can find one movie in the summer to watch that, would interest you.
Yeah, but in kind of a similar vein, there's a guy by the name of the Flying Hawaiian, which is a good name, who wrote in this, I hope you don't mind, but I put a link to your website on my profile page. Is this not cool? Let me know and I'll take it down.
Real quick, let's talk about, we need help promoting.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
This is a good time to bring this up.
If you want to help us promote, hey, use any picture that's on our website. Use any link you want to.
This is not like the right click ban fucking sites that are all over the place.
Hey, look at it like this. We were trying to promote the hell out of the May of the Dead stuff, and we can get back into that real quick, too. There were sites there that are supposed to be for the fans, by the fans, like what we are.
And some of these sites are just basically news collection agencies. They just collect a bunch of fucking horror news from
And I don't give a shit. I'll mention the name, bloodydisgusting.com.
Well, actually, that one, but I was thinking like Gorezone, too.
Fuck, Gorezone is shit.
Gorezone.net, by the way, if you want to go there.
Gorezone just copies the shit from Bloody Disgusting and Fangoria. Bloodydisgusting.com, okay? Yeah, I'm not really pissed about this more than I am that they're supposed to be there for the fans, to give the fans all the info they want. We had some cool sites, arrowonthehead.com. They pass along the info for May of the Dead.
BloodyDisgusting.com did too.
BloodyDisgusting wouldn't do any of that shit. They wouldn't put up shit.
We sent shit in, of course, to like Fangoria, but you can imagine that we weren't ever going to get a reply from them assholes. But you would think that the smaller kind of independent sites like that are always going on about how people should start your own sites and get the word out because that's the only way that horror's going to prevail.
Yeah.
And then the fucking bastards, they won't run anything on their sites that don't have directly to do with
them. Yeah, they would rather pass along the cover art for...
I'll always know what you did last summer. Yeah, I always know what you did.
The fans give a shit about that, I'm sure. But, we've got to start this ourselves. The fans have got, if you're a fan of this show, help us promote. I know a lot of you do, and I really appreciate it. And that's the only way we can get the word out there, because all of these corporate fuckers aren't going to help us.
There's a section on the message board that says help us promote, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And all it is a bunch of our different banners and different shit like that that you can basically just copy off the site and put up.
We know people that work at Blood Disgust. It's nothing against them. They obviously don't have control over that. I think what this is against is the corporate assholes that just, for some reason, they're afraid that, we're going to get something on them, that we're competing with them or something.
There's two things I found out in the last week, if you really want to get into this shit.
Because this show's going to be 3 hours long.
I've never even thought about it like this, but it is pissing me off. And one of the things is the fact that apparently scoops are a big issue for a lot of these people at these fucking sites.
Yeah.
And when I say scoops, I mean the sites that get specific news stories from directors or actors about certain movies and stuff like that. Here's what you people need to realize about this show. It's a weekly fucking radio show. We could give two fucking dicks about scoops. It doesn't help us at all. That's We're not competing with you for that shit. We don't care. It doesn't do
That's
anything.
That's not the point, dude.
Yeah. We can't beat you all to any of this stuff because we do it weekly, not daily. That's the first thing. The second thing is, enough's enough with this fucking shit, and it's time for a change. I guess to quote, you know, somebody famous. But I don't know when it became a bad thing to be a fan of horror and also to work or do something involved in the horror business, but it seems like a lot of people try to separate the two, and that's just bullshit. Look, I am a fucking fan of horror before I am anything else, before I am an interviewer or a reviewer or somebody that hands out news and shit. The only reason we do this is because we're fans of horror. If you do what we do with any of this for any other reason than being a fan, you're a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
God, all I can say is that I would never purposely try to act like that I'm not a fan of anybody.
Because if you're in this shit, you're a fan to begin with. I even up to Tony Timpone, okay?
Yeah, which is sad to say, but yeah, I agree.
He has to be a fan to be there. Bottom line, you can act like a journalist all you want. You're on a goddamn website. If you want to be a journalist, you write for a goddamn newspaper or a magazine. If you're writing on a fucking website, you're nothing more than just a fan. So get that through your thick skulls. Uncle Bill and the Creepy Kentuckian, we are fans. We're not journalists. We'll never be journalists. We do this shit for the fans, if you will. So anybody that doesn't like that, they can go suck the fuck.
That being said,
let's get right back into the fan news because I was waiting, seriously, 2 weeks to do this.
Let me just, I just want to say this one last thing about this whole thing. If you people, as fans, think that any of those sites that we just mentioned, including Fangoria, give one shade of fuck about you or care anything about like what you have to say or what you think or what you might want to hear, then you are sorely fucking disillusioned. Because I've talked to these people, and they don't give two shits.
Yeah. It's business for them.
And this ain't a business, if you will. This is horror.
They got to climb the Twiwoo, baby.
So, yeah, go over to our message board and steal our shit and help us promote. And don't fucking support these assholes. Fuck them.
Yeah, support the fans. Because it's only going to take a revolution of the fans to uprise and stop all this bullshit from being made.
Exactly.
Anyway, Chum from the board mentions that he bought the Cabin Fever DVD a couple months ago, and he goes, "You guys are right, it reeks of horse shit from beginning to end."
It does.
But it was only $4, so it won't sell, and giving it away would only further the suffering from someone else. What do you guys think would be the best and most appropriate way to destroy it? First up, Uncle Bill, you go up. Best way to destroy Cabin Fever DVD.
Put it in between Halloween and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And that way the greatness of those films will cause that shittiness to just combust.
To evaporate.
Yeah.
Well, here's how I thought of doing it, okay? Take the disc, put it into a blender, okay, and turn it on like puree or grind or whatever you got until it's dust, right? Then get you a glass of milk. Put the DVD mix in the milk and mix it up and make like a Cabin Fever chocolate milk mix. Then drink it, and then you'll either piss it or shit it back out. So it will return to what it originally was to begin with, piss and shit. So there you go.
So there's two wonderful suggestions for you. I don't even think I got done reading this because we got off on the big rant.
Oh, do it. I can't even remember. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is from the Flying Hawaiian.
I'm sorry, Flying Hawaiian.
Yeah, we're sorry about that. We'll continue to read this. The reason I put it up is because I found your site, talking about the banner and the link to our site, is because I found your site from going to homepage of the dead. I downloaded your Friday the 13th show And after listening to the whole thing in one setting, I immediately got the rest of them and have been listening to them nonstop while working on the computer. Your show without kissing ass, because I know you don't like that, is so refreshing and good because I feel the same way you guys do about horror about 99% of the time. I like cabin fever, sorry. Yeah, well, probably didn't like that last question. Yeah. And it truly is a show by fans. I've turned on several people to your site in the past few days, and I can't wait to hear what all is coming next.
You know what, though? Even though we badmouth Eli Roth, and you all know we hate his movies and everything, he's even not so much the problem as the rest of Hollywood is. Because, you know, if you go out and you support the Omen remake, which is coming out soon, you'll just be funding the Return of the Living Dead remake and the Day of the Dead remake and all the other remakes that's going to be coming out. So, you know, just let us watch it for you. And we'll confirm that it's shitty to you. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, I really wish somebody would do that. You know,
we're going to be your voice for shit, if you will.
Yeah, that's true.
We got something from Rock and Roll Daddy. He mentioned here, while listening to you guys talk about Land of the Dead, I couldn't help but disagree what you said about having stars in it. I think that Dennis Hopper playing Kaufman was a great idea. If Kaufman represents Bush, then it should be an actor that everyone can recognize. That way everyone can identify the face and the position, etc. Other than that, I agree with most points, and Asia is just sexy as hell and needs to be there. Also, the comment Savini made about Halloween is just hilarious. I thought that I was the only one that thought the movie was so overrated. It ripped off Black Christmas and was the starting point for Friday the 13th, but I don't hold Halloween in that high of status. What's your opinion?
Well, you're entitled to that opinion. Personally, that's on my top five movies of all time, no matter what, anyway. But as far as the stuff goes with Dennis Hopper, I stand by all that shit that we said, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because he was a big star at one time. Okay, nobody else in any of those films that we're talking about was ever a star in any
shape or form. Yeah, so it doesn't matter. I mean, Too Wong Fu was out. Okay. You didn't see Gary Clark dressing up like a woman in 10 years before Day of the Dead. Well, at least I didn't see it. I don't know if he did or not.
Yeah, he may.
He may have.
I don't know. This question comes from an email. Next question. From John McDonough. I asked this a while ago while I found no example of a horror movie doing this. Wikipedia?
Wikipedia.com.
Yeah. Claims about Universal Soldier. The film was followed by two television movie sequels in 1998 and a theatrical sequel in 1999. Only Van Damme returned for the theatrical sequel. I guess what he's trying to say is, has there ever been a horror movie that went from television or video, direct to video, direct television, and then came back and did a theatrical release?
I don't believe
we
so.
Couldn't think of any.
Yeah, we were trying to think earlier on.
Yeah.
We weren't, you know, I was about to strain myself. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I was about to have to go shit.
You got something from Scab Boy. Great show and great questions. I've never heard any interview that has had so much information. Mentions the Tom Savini interview, speaking about Friday the 13th, Creepshow, Dawn, Day, and Night of the Living Dead. As for Land of the Dead, I'm going to break your balls for a second. You guys spoke about how you hated that Land had big-name stars in it. He mentions, trust me, I hated that John Tu Wong Fu Leguizamo as well was in it. But you guys went on to say that Hopper, Leguizamo, and company hasn't really been in anything lately, which makes them a perfect fit for the genre. Has-been actors not really doing anything. He mentioned, hey, it could be worse. Did you guys see that horrible Sleepy Hollow movie called The Hollow with NSYNC's Nick Carter? No, I haven't seen that, and I never will.
Yeah,
the movie had appearances by Stacy Keach, which we like him, all right. Judge Reinhold, which we don't like. Nicholas.
What the fuck are you talking about, buddy? Vice Versa was killer. I love Judge Reinhold.
That's killer because of Fred Savage. But I agree, the cast, the CG, and the atmosphere killed Land for me. The movie looked like it was filmed in a fake set environment. It definitely did. Seeing that a place like Pittsburgh would have been cheaper to film in. I don't know why Romero chose Toronto. I'm guessing Romero didn't choose Toronto.
Probably not.
My thoughts that Romero didn't have much pull in the film, as you guys mentioned. There's no way in hell that he would have cast the cast the way it was. Chose the locations and used all that shitty CG.
Well, I
don't believe that either, actually.
Yeah, I would guarantee that the only way we'll know that for sure is to ask Romero himself. But after that, we'll never have the chance to do that. I'm fairly certain.
Well, once Romero breaks his ties from the mainstream horror audience, which for some reason he has it right now, we'll find out what happened.
Yeah, you know,
only then we'll find out
behind that movie.
But is that it for the fan mail?
Well, I just want to tell everybody before they start sending emails that it didn't escape my attention the fact of the sort of irony and hypocrisy and the fact that we sit here and just bash the fuck out of Fangoria, but yet we talked about, you know, the weekend of horrors that's going on. That didn't escape my attention. It's just sheer coincidence the fact they put on the best conventions. They still don't give a fuck about you. That's all.
Well, yeah, and Fangoria's website is awesome. I'll give them that. Yeah. They've got a great website. And Blood Discussion has a great website. Now, that ain't the point. The point is they take your shit, especially Blood Discussion, they take it way too fucking serious.
Yeah, they really do.
And they don't want to let anybody have a little piece of the pie. And that's fine. I just want to tell them to go fuck themselves from now on.
I can't agree more with that.
We're going to take a quick break, though, and get right into the DVD reviews for the week, the movie reviews. I know a lot of you people love this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be right back here on DeadPitch.com.
Hey, this is Tiffany Shepard. You're listening to Deadpit.com. These fuckers are crazy. What you gonna do when the sun don't shine? The moon don't come around on time. What you gonna do when the storm won't rain? And the wind don't kick in the airport.
When was the last time you were scared out of your wits by a movie? Halloween, the motion picture about the most terrifying night of the year. Halloween, the night three teenage girls discover the real trick is to stay alive.
Tommy,
Halloween, the night he came home. From Compass International Pictures, rated R.
Welcome back here to DeadPit.com. As you all know, I'm the creepy Kentuckian.
And I'm Uncle Billy.
Dumbass.
We're going to get into some movie reviews, DVD reviews, stuff like that. A couple weeks ago, we had the chance to see the first Lionsgate WWE
partnership.
Yeah, partnership with See No Evil, starring Kane and directed by Gregory Dark of White Bun Busters, who's one of our favorite directors.
Which, by the way, you have no idea how much shit that I personally have taken for even mentioning that I went to see this film from people that either hate wrestling. Or just hate the fact that guy is
a dumb wrestling fan going to see a movie. That's the main thing that people say, a stupid wrestling fan going to see a horror movie.
Yeah. But they
Well, let me tell you.
I guess they can go eat a shit filled Twinkie if they don't like it.
Yeah, we got all kinds of new shit up our sleeves. It was what I expected when I went in. Your basic plot, if you want a plot for a slasher movie, here it is. You have a bunch of juvenile delinquents getting ready to get out of, you know, juvie hall or whatever. They get a month off of their sentence if they go clean up this old hotel for a weekend. You have your basic teenage-looking cast there, cast of characters, and, you know, the crazy madman, Jacob Goodnight, is what he's called in the movie, Kane. Shows up and just starts killing left and right. That's the best way to explain blood, I suppose.
Yeah, and as far as the way that it looks and the cinematography and stuff, it looks like every other film Lionsgate's ever
done. It looks like you wipe your ass with the
yeah.
film.
That's probably my biggest problem with the film, other than actually the last section of it, which was CG, all to hell.
Which they killed Kane off in the last part, which you don't really have to predict. You already know that's going to happen.
But I swear to God, in my opinion, this movie was 10 times better than anybody could imagine it should be, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was going to be sort of good simply because you've got a porn director directing it. He's not some, you know, self-righteous asshole that wants to do something, you know, along the lines of Eli Roth. We have to mention Eli.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned him that much.
You're going to have a guy that probably watched, you know, he probably watched Halloween. He probably watched Friday the 13th, probably watched Nightmare on Elm Street. And he saw what worked in those movies. And he brought it to See No Evil. And it's not the greatest movie in the world. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's some bad parts in it. But it's definitely something that I think I would probably buy on DVD when it hits the shelves. Probably another 4 months from now, knowing Lionsgate. But, I mean, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the only thing that this movie, I kept thinking before we went to see it, the way they could have screwed this up is if the death scenes. That's the only way you could screw this movie up. Because you know the plot's going to be paper thin, the action's going to be shitty, and it's going to look like a Lionsgate film. So there's nothing to worry about there. But all, like, especially one of the death scenes that I can remember, where the mother actually gets thrown, like, into the spikes and shit. It's all pretty good.
And the effects, except
for the last effect, are all makeup effects, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. So,
and his gimmick is, Kane's gimmick in the movie is, you know, it's called See No Evil. So he plucks out the victim's eyes, and they actually show it in one scene, him, you know, picking out an eye with his fingers and stuff, and it's pretty cool.
It's just a straight up fucking slasher movie.
Something we needed. There haven't been a lot of slasher movies lately. And, you know,
you take out Kane, put somebody else in, it would just be another Lionsgate DVD.
And I see it like this. There's a lot of people out there that say, well, let's not support the video game adaptations, the remakes, the sequels. Well, when a movie like this comes along, they're bitching about it because it's something that's related to wrestling or something. Who gives a shit? It's something new. It's original script from, you know, some guy. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
But I mean, it's an original movie. Why don't you go support it? Why not?
It's got a wrestling.
Yeah, let's go on. We both recommend See No Evil, though. Go see it. If you still find it out in theaters, go see it.
Especially if you're a fan of slasher movies. I guess the next one would be Funny Man, which I'm pretty sure is a UK release.
Yeah. And we know that Subversive Cinema released this one. It just came out recently.
This movie is almost exactly like a British version of Leprechaun.
Nightmare on Elm Street, sort of.
In that, I mean that the killer is some wisecracking, like, made-up, you know, creature that just goes around and basically, you know, mugs for the camera and shit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kills somebody off in some creative way. Not with a pogo stick, though, like a Leprechaun. But the basic plot of the movie is that a record producer wins a hand of cards from Christopher Lee's character. And so in that hand of cards, he wins this house that's Christopher Lee's house. And when he moves into it, it turns out that it's inhabited by this thing that looks like a Joker.
A jester.
Yeah, a jester, Joker, whatever, who's dressed in, like, full, you know, appliance makeup.
And it's really bad-looking makeup, too.
And he just goes around, and, you know, there's a couple of kids that show up in a van sporadically for no apparent reason. And
they get lost.
Yeah, and he goes around and just kills each person one by one in all these different odd ways. Like, there's one scene that I really liked. There's a character called Velma.
Yeah.
Who looks just like the Scooby-Doo character.
Yeah, who's also named Velma.
Yeah, and he takes, like, some kind of a horn and blows it into the back of her head, and, like, her eyeballs and glasses and shit shoot out.
Yeah, with a brain behind
it. Yeah, and, like, go flying towards the camera, which I thought that was pretty good. And there's a couple of, it's got some good, that's the thing I liked about it. It had some good, like, makeup and death scenes and stuff.
Yeah, the only thing is, I'm not a real big fan of British comedy.
Yeah, which if you're not a fan of that kind of shit, this would be horrible.
So it was kind of hard for me. I mean, if you're a fan of Monty Python and stuff like that, I guess it's like that, you know. There is some cool gore scenes in it, though, and I know Subversive Cinema just come out with a special edition DVD of it, and it's got a really good transfer and some cool extras.
Yeah, you can go to www.subversivecinema.com to check this out, and the special features are a commentary track with writer-director Simon Sprackling and Funny Man Tim James, interview with Christopher Lee, an original short film version of Funny Man, which is, I'm assuming, what got picked up to make this movie.
Yeah.
But that's funny, man. And I would recommend it just barely. It's like right on the hairline of like. Yeah. Kind of.
And I guess the next one we can discuss on here is Dave Wiskovich's film, Torturous.
I swear to God, and I'm not trying to be like, you know, funny or even condescending or anything like this. I think that guy is like the next Ed Wood. I shit you not.
Well, all right. The first movies that we talked about, Suburban Sasquatch and Fungicide, okay? I would agree about those. But this movie, I'm serious. If a big-name director or big-name producer, somebody, saw this movie and saw the potential that it would have for mainstream, I think they would pick it up, honestly. I think it's got some really cool storylines to it, and I could really see it, you know. If you put $5 million or something behind it, it could be a really, really good horror movie and or a thriller or whatever.
I don't know.
But let's go on. What's it about?
I don't know if that's true, though, because I think the beauty of those films is the fact they look so fucking generic.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the basic idea of the movie.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what the basic idea of the movie is, because it's not that original, because I know it's been done in at least three or four different films, but the basic idea of it is that a guy gets abducted by aliens, okay, or an alien in particular.
Yeah.
And it's going through his whole life, showing all the things that he's done wrong, basically.
Let's think ahead here for a second, though. He thinks it's an alien at first.
Yeah, that's true. It goes through, like, basically each stage in his life where he really did something.
Really was an asshole.
Yeah, really was horrible to somebody. Yeah. And then, in between that, when he's horrible to somebody, he has a flashback to being back up on this, you know, which I guess
it looks like a spaceship. Yeah.
And, you know, he'll have these flashbacks and delusions about being back on there. And there's this alien creature that turns out to be like a human being and takes his mask off and basically tells him that basically he's dead and he's trying to go back through all these experiences to try to learn the right thing that he was supposed to do.
Yeah, and he learns that he's been dead for many, many years.
Yeah.
And that Tartarus is basically limbo between heaven, hell, and the earth.
Yeah.
Which and I thought was cool.
The thing that, you know, messes him up is he keeps choosing the wrong path.
Yeah, like the guy is trying to give him to save a life, to do something good, which would carry him over to the next life, but he never does it.
Yeah. So he continuously ends up in this kind of like purgatory where he's being like probed with this vacuum cleaner like
with like a dick snake that sucks all his juice out.
Which is funny because it's got the same sound effects that it had in those other two films.
It does have bad,
which is killing.
It's got bad sound effects. It's got bad CG, horrendous CG, Mario Paint CG.
Yeah, bad's not even the word for that.
You'd have to see it. But hey, I'm gonna be honest here. This movie has I think it's a great movie actually. And I never thought I would say that from,
holy
the, guy,
shit, that's
from the guy that did Fungicide. I love this fucking movie.
I love it, but I don't love it for the same reasons, apparently. I think that his whole charm is the fact that he makes these movies that you are so, like, not even the fact they're bad. They're just really, like, low budget, and it's just hilarious to watch some of the
shit. It is. But I love the story behind it. I think seriously, if somebody, you know, get a hold of this in Hollywood, I think this could be a major hit movie. Just basic plot behind it is what I mean.
I think it could be a cult movie right now.
Yeah.
That's what I think. But
Dave Wiskovich, you know.
His company is TroubledMoonFilms.com, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Hey, if this is out on DVD, I wholly recommend this movie. I don't know if I could recommend those other ones other than just
Camp. I'd recommend all this shit. I've seen it so far.
I really recommend Tartarus. I thought that was a killer movie.
If you like stuff like the old sci-fi stuff from, you know, the 50s and 60s, it was really, really like hokey with the special effects and stuff, then all that stuff like Fungicide.
And this goes out to Dave, too, who actually, we'd forgot about having this movie, and he emailed us wanting us to review it. And I really thank the hell out of him for, you know, reminding us, because I'm glad I watched it now.
Mm-hmm. It is something completely different.
Yeah.
And, you know, we both liked it, but I think for different reasons.
So check that out.
I guess the next one we're going to mention is the Uwe Boll.
Oh, God.
Inspired classic. And this movie, more so than probably any movie we've ever reviewed on here, has gotten shit on by everybody.
Blood rain, if you will.
Yeah. Okay.
This was enjoyable, too. Sort of.
I want to start off by saying I like this movie.
Oh, Lord.
I don't give a shit what anybody says, but it's got, like, one of the lowest ratings, like, on IMDb that there is. I think it's in the bottom, like, 20 or something. I don't give a shit. This movie is entertaining to me, and I'll tell you why. Because it has absolutely no plot. Well, it has a plot, but it's kind of like the video game plot.
It's entertaining because it doesn't have a plot now.
It doesn't make any sense, the plot does. No, that's not why it's entertaining. It's entertaining because it's just a bunch of different, like, action sequences strung together with, Christiana Loken.
Christiana, who's got some of the best boobs going.
Yeah.
Best titties.
But not only that, but the unrated version, which is the one we have, actually has really good effects in it.
Really well-made movie, no doubt about it. I mean, it had $25 million budget. It should be.
And some of the acting in it is atrocious, but it's kind of funny to watch because, like, people like Michael Madsen, who you'd never think would be that bad in a film.
Michael Madsen looks like he's just there to get, like, some sort of paycheck or something, or get some macaroni and cheese.
And fucking Ben Kingsley.
who's got one of the most horrendous-looking wigs.
Ben Kingsley
with hair.
You could almost picture Ben Kingsley just with his hand out to get the check in this movie, you know, because he's basically not. He's not.
And Michelle Rodriguez is also in it, who...
Okay, all those performances in that movie, including the, Loken performance, are completely, like, throwaway performances, but it's entertaining fucking...
What I
kind of
thought it was is, you remember the Conan movies?
Yeah.
Red Sonja.
It is kind of like
stuff
Red
like
Sonja,
that.
Yeah.
It's like that is what it is. Dino De Laurentiis type swords and sorcery movies, shit like that. That's what it is, pretty much.
Suspend all prejudgment about this film. Take out of consideration the fact that it ever goes anywhere. You know, it never does really lead up to anything. And you know exactly how it's going to end from the beginning of the movie. It's good set pieces and good action sequences strung together. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's got nudity in it. Gratuitous nudity.
From Christina Loken, too.
What the fuck more do you want? And it's Uwe Boll. I'm sorry. Uwe Boll.
And it's got nudity in it.
Yeah, it's got nudity.
Not from Uwe, but, you know.
Thank God.
So, let's go on, though, to an 80s unearthed horror film that was even unearthed to me and you. I know that Axelus sent us this DVD a few weeks ago. The DVD of Death Spa.
Mm-hmm.
Which we both watched this past week. And I know that Ken Foree is actually in it. It's from, like, 1988. And,
what can you say about this movie, really? This is probably one of the closest movies that I've seen to getting the effect that it had when I watched Blood Diner, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they filmed it with the same camera as Blood Diner.
It's a story of a health spa that has a computer system in it that controls basically everything. Like, it controls the amount of resistance in the weight machines. It controls the showers. It controls lockers and everything. And the computer goes crazy.
Yeah.
And basically in kind of like a chopping mall kind of vein.
A lot like chopping mall, too.
Yeah. It starts to kill off all the members of the health spa. So.
And that's the plot, folks.
That's it. That's basically, there's like a mini subplot where this guy's wife killed herself by setting herself on fire. And I really didn't think this was going to go to this, but. You know, you find out that she's a real fucking ghost.
Yeah.
What the hell? Like, I didn't really think they were going to do that.
I don't know.
Thought it would be, like, somebody behind it or something, but it's her. She's a ghost.
Yeah, she's crazy.
And she kills people with...
And she wants her husband, who I think runs the death spa, right?
Yeah.
She wants him back, and she's going to kill everybody until he dies to come with her. That's basically why she does it.
By far, though, the best part of this movie is the really fucking cheesy-ass... effects and like death scenes in it.
There is a lot of that.
There's like one scene where a woman's standing in front of a mirror and it starts to shake and then it just explodes and blows like the upper part of her torso off and it shows her lips like laying in the floor. And then the end scene, which I thought was one of the most shit, like it's got the corpse of, the woman laying there after he's burned her alive and stuff and it starts to get up. And there's like a detective there and shoots it in the head like 4 or 5 times, like the skeleton.
Yeah.
And it ends with like that corpse's eyeball exploding into the camera. I don't know. You just can't find quality
films. I'm surprised I've never, ever heard of that movie before.
Either. I hadn't either, though, yeah.
But, yeah, thanks a lot for sending it. It was a really fun watch. But the next one we're going to talk about, oh, God. This is probably one of my favorite movies of the year, too, which is Rolf Kineski's newest film, Nightmare Man.
Yeah, I got this one in from, actually from Kineski himself, I guess about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we had already heard, like, all kinds of stuff about this movie, but no amount of hype that I could hear about this movie actually could prepare me for how good it was going to be.
Yeah. Really. We talk about people that are ready for the Hollywood system. I think he would probably be on top of that list right now.
Yeah, he's right up there.
Nightmare Man is basically a film that looks like it belongs on the big screen. I mean, I'm sure it's a limited budget. Other than the makeup effects. Now, the makeup effects could use improvement, honestly. But he had a limited budget, you got to remember. And it looks like he focused more on the clarity of the picture, and the film stock looks really, really good. But anyway, let's go on to the movie.
But yeah, the makeup effects are secondary because...
That doesn't matter. If you watch the movie, you'll see.
The plot of the film goes, it starts off with a woman who, she gets a fertility mask for her husband, I think. And that's how it starts out, right? And this mask is
she's collecting masks or something, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's like a mask because her husband's impotent or something like that, and it's supposed to be something. Well, anyway, somehow or another it possesses her, and she starts to become kind of crazy, thinking that this nightmare man
is
after her. He's chasing her around and, you know, these different things. And so her husband basically thinks she's just apeshit crazy. And he takes her off on this, you know, little trip. And you find out a little bit later on in the film that, I won't even give it away.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
Yeah, but needless to say, she goes on this trip and she runs into this group of kids led by Tiffany Shepis.
Yeah. After, by the way, she's being chased by the Nightmare Man through the woods and stumbles upon the house where Tiffany Shepis and three other supposed, you know, college students, I guess, or yeah. That's always the sort of role they stick Tiffany with for some reason.
People that look like they're about 30 playing college students.
Yeah. But, you know, and it basically starts there. The Nightmare Man is after her and... You know, it singles off or, you know, kills off all the teenagers, or not teenagers, college students, whatever they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
All the young adults, I suppose you'd say, one by one. And, you know, it would probably, describing it sounds a lot like something else you'd see, but it's really not, you know. It's something completely new.
The cinematography in the film is probably the best that I've seen in a long time from an independent director. And I will say this without reservation, actually. I know we've had her on here, and she talked about this film being her best work and her, you know, it is. I've seen a lot of Tiffany Shepis's movies, including, you know, Scarecrow and The Hazing and, you know, Corpses and a bunch of other stuff, that some of it by Kineski. But this is actually really good acting performance, and she stars in most of the film. You know, she's the lead actress.
She is the lead in the entire film.
Which is odd, because they usually put her in some kind of supporting
role. Like in a role.
But it's fairly obvious to me that she carried this entire movie, and it was a really good acting performance. So I put it up to anybody.
You got to talk about Kineski, too, because leaps and bounds. I mean, you know, we talked about The Hazing on here, and we've talked about, There's Nothing Out There. This movie is way beyond those. I don't know, you know, I don't know if he's made movies since The Hazing, but this movie is leaps and bounds better than The Hazing, honestly. I mean, we both love The Hazing. This movie kicks ass.
It's rare to me, and I was saying this today, there's two people I can think of where as I watch their films, I can kind of see them grow in all aspects. And, you know, Kineski writes most of this stuff, too, as well as directs it, and so does Brett Kelly. But they grow from each film, you know. And Kineski especially, from, you know, The Hazing to this, I thought was a huge step.
Yeah.
And that's only been, you know, maybe 2 years ago. And, you know, in the same way with Brett Kelly, you can see him getting better. And I don't see that a lot with new directors.
Yeah, another thing we mentioned about both these guys, too, and Brett Kelly, you know, we've talked about his movies too. For some reason, they just don't get. Nobody talks about them. You don't see them being on Fangoria or Bloodisgusting. You don't hear reviews of their movies or anything. And I don't understand that. That's another thing I don't understand. And for some reason, not a lot of people know about Konevsky's films.
Yeah, he's got like a catalog of work that. Some really fucking
has spanned
good,
for over a decade.
Yeah,
actually.
Some really good horror films are in there too. And I don't understand it why he's not gotten the kind of recognition that he really deserves. But I don't know.
That's just the way
but
it goes.
Speaking of recognition, though, the thing about this film is that it's not currently released yet, and they're still looking for distributors. And I swear to God, if this movie doesn't get picked up by somebody, that's a damn disgrace to the independent.
Oh, it'll get
genre.
Picked up. There's no way. As soon as somebody sees this movie and sees how freaking talented Konevsky is, and shit, hey, we don't really know Konevsky, do we?
No.
People think that we're buddies with him or something.
I know him because I like his movies, and that
we know of him.
Yeah.
And we know him enough where he will actually send us stuff to review. I'm not, you know, this show isn't about favoritism or anything. This is about who has talent and who deserves to be recognized. And he's one of those people that deserve that.
Yeah, he really is. And I think that, you know, along with Tiffany Shepis, who deserves recognition for this role too.
Yeah. It kind of pissed me off when we had her on, and there were some people that listened to the show that didn't know who she was.
Yeah, well, there's people that listen to this show that don't know who Dante Tomaselli is.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the point of the show. We're going to educate, baby.
We're bringing horror to the masses.
You're going to have a couple of Kentuckians here that's going to teach you some horror.
Yeah.
If you don't know it. But
a couple of backward-ass fucking hillbillies that are going to educate people about horror.
Yeah. But, yeah, this has turned out to be the longest fucking regular show yet by... fuck, it's going to end up being 2.5 hours.
We're just excited. This is a big time for horror.
We had to get some things out, though, on this show. And next week, we'll promise we won't ramble on as much. And we're going to have James Bryan on the show, which I'm really excited about. You know, if you all don't know about Don't Go in the Woods, you will next week. We're going to have him on. We're going to discuss, you know, there's all kinds of shit going on in horror right now.
But like we said before, and I still stand by this, nobody is going to help us out that, you know, or very few people are going to help us out, and nobody is going to give a shit about what you people want to hear or see unless you actually vocalize this shit. You know, so get behind somebody, get behind some kind of independent filmmakers, I don't care if you get behind a studio, just get behind something. Don't just sit around and let these fuckers dictate what it is that you get to see and what it is that, you know, gets mainstream press recognition.
Yeah, I mean, I feel if we can, you know, tell people about some of these filmmakers like Dante Tomaselli or Chris Garitano or, you know, Rolf Konevsky, if one person learns about those movies and enjoys them, I think we've done our job.
Yeah, and it's not time to be preachy and get all fucking revolutionary shit on you. But seriously to God, the only way any of this shit's going to change is if the people actually do something about it.
And
so,
it's the fans' genre. Horror is the fans' genre.
It's the last genre left for the fans, actually. And if you fuck around much longer and just accept the way things are, it's not going to even be that anymore.
You end up going to have Julia Roberts in a horror movie soon, and we don't want that.
Yeah, and you already got Julia Stiles. It's just one step away from being fucking Julia Roberts, I'll tell
you.
So,
next week, again, James Bryan, Don't Go in the Woods, is on deadpit.com. And until next week, I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
And we'll see you